Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Friday, April 26, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Now, we put on an excellent interview today with Adam Green, as we discussed. I was not going to be doing a show today. That was the plan, but then I realized tomorrow I have the food panel that we're going to be doing, the unadulterated food panel. That is, tickets only, I understand. It's a CHD event in Tennessee. I'm sure you can look it up. But the point is that I'm going to be busy most of the day tomorrow. So unfortunately, rather fortunate for you, I'm going to be doing a show today to get some stuff out that I wanted to cover that I'm not going to be able to discuss tomorrow. You know, again, that being said, who knows what will change by tomorrow. Anything can change if I think something big enough is happening, just so you guys know. But I generally try to give you my outline for the next day, or you know, when my shows are going to be. Now today we're going to get into some pretty important developments in a lot of different stories, things that I think are really important for some of the things that we've been talking about for a really long time, developments in regard to the UNRWA conversation, in regard to food aid, hostage conversation. But we're going to start with an interesting statement made by Whitney Webb in regard to the two-party illusion, something you know that I'm very passionate about, and how interesting it is that the person that she's pointing to is acting like deciding for yourself that you want to be an independent is suddenly a threat to democracy. Well, yeah, if you understand that the democracy they're talking about is the thing that we're all highlighting as a problem in the world, not what democracy actually means. Or really, even if we actually understand the meaning of democracy, mob rule is not really what the republic was meant to be. The point nonetheless is that it highlights an obvious reality that the illusion of the two-party paradigm and the idea that we're supposed to only partake in the choices given to us, Pepsi and Coke and the whole slaughterhouse two sides idea where it's like, well, you know, they both lead to the same end. It's obvious this is kind of a gasp. It's going, we are forced to acknowledge that you guys are fleeing from our illusion, so we have to try to force you back in. And I think that's a lot of what's going on today. So I'll make a couple of points to start with that. I want to talk about the UNRWA conversation because I really hope we haven't missed how important that is, as I really tried to highlight about the right of return, the importance of what this entity was created for, whatever you think it's become today, and what they're really trying to accomplish. And how corporate media across the board at this point has been very clear. They've provided no evidence. And yet, just like every other claim, plenty of corporate media, independent media, rather specifically mainstream alternative media, have continued to just state those things. We're going to make a point about this really clearly today in the campus protest point, if we get there today. People that I've talked about a lot are making some pretty ridiculous claims about people that we can prove aren't what they say they are. And this is just typical for the sort of partisan, mainstream, alternative media, nonsensical people out there. But that the UNRWA conversation is not provable terrorist organizations linked with Hamas, that everything they've claimed, and I'll show you directly from now, even from Washington Post and somebody else, I forget, we'll get to it in a second, highlighting the most current conversation coming from the UN investigation that they have, even the person that they fired, right in the beginning. Remember, there's one person they got rid of right out of the gate and said, we're going to investigate. They're claiming we didn't do that because we knew he was guilty. We're just trying to do it just to be safe. Well, then they attacked him for it anyway. Turns out he wasn't actually connected to Hamas, and that this person, you know, on and on and on. The point is that they've now come across the board from, Politico, Guardian, Washington Post, all the people that we should not be blindly trusting or trusting any at all, are now telling you that they have no evidence. My point in saying all this is that it becomes very clear that Israel continues to lie about that and everything else we're discussing. Now, why is that? And why is it so transparently obvious that they're just blatantly lying, putting forward half-truths, complete evidence-free claims, and yet this keeps going? Well, it's because of the people in power. Craig Murray, former ambassador, has been speaking out a lot about a lot of the dynamics around Israel and Gaza, but he put out a really important statement that I'll shout out the person that shared this as well, highlighting that in his opinion, and his, as a former diplomat and somebody who has lots of connections, and is he's saying he believes that the Biden administration is in lockstep with the Netanyahu government. Now, it's not just Netanyahu, but that was the easiest way to frame that in the title. It's the Israeli government, quite frankly, all of it for the most part, save few parts that I think we could at least maybe aren't But overall, it's pretty clear that even their own government and their own corporate media talks about how there is no. And it's not. They don't think of it left and right like we talk about this in the United States. That's similar, but it's very different in this conversation. But that there is no left in this conversation. It's only right and wildly extreme right in the Israeli government. And that's in regard to what they are in the right left paradigm of their conversation, which is similar, but it's just not the same thing. So don't blindly lay it over the top of what's going on over there. But that these people are all in the same mindset. But the point is that in reality, so is the Biden administration. And so would Trump, by the way, in my opinion, if he was in power, that they want to occupy all of Gaza. They want to remove all the Palestinians. And this is a powerful statement. And I think this really does show you that this is the only reason this continues, because they really do believe, or at least believe that it benefits them, to continue to support what Netanyahu and their government are currently doing. It's pretty disgusting, as everyone seems to know that. Even corporate media now highlighting things like a Forbes article. What if the State Department was allowed to do its job on Israel and Gaza? Well, the truth being is, I think the State Department's job is not what they're saying or pretending it is in this article. But, you know, what if the State Department was allowed to do what we're told they're supposed to do? The point is, they're all calling them out for just ignoring all of the things that Israel says aren't even true. It's a really interesting dynamic. And we're also going to get into, by the way, UK overlap as well in regard to the pre-planned support for all of this, which is really interesting, even into foreknowledge. But talking about getting again into some of the discussions we've already been having, specifically a new development in regard to the aid workers. You might not have known that there's been numerous examples of aid workers killed after the World Central Kitchen. Well, probably because the only reason that got attention from most of the people out there is because they were foreigners and not Palestinians. But reality being is that that's not the first time either. But after this, there's been a lot more. We're going to go into why that's important and what the propagandists are trying to say around it, including making up entirely false claims about other aid workers being attacked by Hamas, while UN. There's no evidence to any of the things they're claiming. Certainly could have happened, but there's nothing to. There's no corporate media coverage. There's no independent media coverage. There's not even Israeli statements. There's just propagandists on Twitter making claims, typically how this goes. And other points that I'll bring in around that. We're going to talk about the mass grave conversation again. And this is one of the points that I really think is important. Euromed Human Rights Monitor is saying, according to their work and their research and their people on the ground, that they have recorded 141 mass graves. 141. Now, this shouldn't even be that hard to wrap your mind around with everything that we've seen. This is the reality of what's going on. And the shocking thing for some people is that it's accepted almost by a lot of the people in this conversation as if, well, we'll get into it. But the point is, we're also going to get into the campus protests and how much of the things we're hearing from not just that conversation, but the one about the mass graves, the conversation of UNRWA, everything else. You have Zionist manipulators and people outwardly lying about every aspect of this. And the campus protest conversation is just one of the most cartoonish that I've seen in all of this, which is actually a pretty crazy statement when you think about it. And that's not to say that there's not people that are bad people or people that hate Jewish people in these groups. Like, I'll be the first to tell you that there is people in these protests that are bad people. You know why I'll say that? Because I'll be the first to tell you that there are those people in literally every protest you'll ever find anywhere in the world. Because if you put a group of people together and there's hundreds of them, I'm willing to bet my life you'll find somebody in that group that's a bad person. And if you fixate on that one person or that group or this, and it's ridiculous to broad stroke an entire group of people as anti-Semitic, you know, especially when half of them are Jewish. And that's the real point here. Ben Shapiro out here, well, we'll get to that as well, making arguments about how this is clearly a violation of X, Y, and Z, making Jewish people unsafe. Well, you mean the Jewish people too, that are there protesting alongside the Palestinians? And you're telling us that that crowd is making Jews unsafe while there are Jews that are part of that group? I mean, he knows this because there's prominent Jews around the country screaming about how that's the case. So they're liars, guys. These are hacks and liars and blindly pro-Zionist manipulators. So we're going to get into all of that. And as usual, it should all be seen as, you know, one conversation, and it all comes together with how there's just so much dishonesty in this conversation, and it is leading into a lot of other things. So let's start again with the conversation of what I mentioned about Whitney Webb and her statement. Now, I'm going to actually really quickly play a piece of this just because I start at this. Let's see, where was that? Just this one. Actually, I just have to do something 10 seconds, so I'm just going to play this to start.
So are you saying Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately boosted Hamas to try to prevent a Palestinian state?
Yeah, sure. He deliberately and systematically even told on record, whoever wants to avoid the threat of a two-state solution has to support my policy of paying protection money to the Hamas.
So what we did, with the permission of our prime minister, is to let Qatar to transfer a huge amount of money in cash, probably more than $1.4 billion. By doing it, we increase the power of Hamas.
Apologies for that. That was sort of disjointed. As you guys know that are paying attention to the ups and downs of where we're going, I'm still getting set up here, and there was something that happened in the background that I just had to take care of. So let's get started. So this is actually a really important thing to start with that is not necessarily, of all the things today, connected with everything else, other than the reality of the two-party illusion and how that is actually connected to damn near everything we're discussing. But it's actually a really important thing to highlight. She writes, well, first, let's read what he wrote. This is March 1st. Half of Americans, which, by the way, you've been hearing people like Steve and myself scream about this for the longest time, half of Americans now identify as independents. You know, what have we been saying the whole time, right? The largest voting bloc in every single election, as far back as you can look, in my opinion, and I say that because, you know, there's probably things going back far enough that we should be questioning that wasn't doing this like I am today, question everything, right? But nonetheless, my point is that you can look back very far and see that the largest voting bloc that doesn't partake, or rather the largest voting bloc in the election are the people that don't partake in the election, first and foremost, which is just crazy to think about. If that kind of stat was there was a case where that happened with Venezuela, where they said, look at Venezuela. Most of the country doesn't even partake, and those that do don't even believe in the... And at that moment, I pointed to the U.S. That's right. It was Macron who said that in regard to Venezuela. And at that moment, I pointed to Macron's numbers, which were worse. I mean, think about the stupidity of making that statement about Venezuela when your personal numbers are actually worse. And his point was, those numbers prove it's not a democracy. Well, therefore, you make your point in reverse. The point, though, is that if most of the country isn't even partaking, and then the largest bloc within the ones that vote are always independent, we live in an illusion. And we just get dragged along by the screamers and the two-party illusion who desperately need you to keep stuck in that, to be lost in it. And that's the same people we mention every time, whether they know it or not, they're playing that role. Half of Americans now identify as independents, not new. This is a record high in Gallup polling, which Gallup polling can be manipulated just about like everything else. But it says, and a huge jump since the election. This disaffiliation, which is not what that is. Disaffiliation, well, I guess from the two major parties, is very dangerous for democracy, he says. That's the dumbest statement in all of this. Isn't democracy about choosing what you want and representing your opinion? So how in the world is representing your opinion, apart from those two things, dangerous for democracy? What he means is it's dangerous for their control over your perception. Hashtag democracy. It says it reveals deep, deep dissatisfaction. Yeah, well, that's obvious. That's important, guys. This guy is a political scientist, New American, different, you know, other platforms. I just think that's a really strange thing to say. How is it dangerous for democracy for people to say what they believe? It's only dangerous for the control structure. As a political scientist, that should be freaking obvious. But Whitney Webb writes, no longer having blind faith in one of the two branches of the American Uniparty is, quote, very dangerous for our democracy. Having to choose between one SHIT with white sprinkles and one with rainbow sprinkles is not a real democracy. Exactly. I mean, just think about how strange it is to have the courage to say that kind of a statement when that's, I mean, this is the reason I want to start with this other than the two-party illusion is because this is what we're seeing everywhere right now. Blatantly false statements. I mean, in fact, contradictory statements, hypocritical statements that are blatantly self-evident. It's not against democracy if people are simply expressing their opinion. But here he is saying that because they want you to think otherwise, because I think we're watching a desperate shift in power structures right now. And I was making this point really strong yesterday. We are watching a revolution take place. And I don't think it's some organized revolution. We're just watching a true revolution of the mind, revolution of what we believe. And this is terrifying to people in power. Now, I'm not going to say that it might not just go away tomorrow with one new false flag or one new statement or one new war. Who knows? But we actually have this happening, in my opinion, right now. And that's why we're seeing stuff like this. Now, in regard to what Whitney and I recently talked about and what her work's focused on for a very long time, which was the idea of the, you know, using the two-party illusion to manipulate, in this case, specifically conservatives, to justify biometrics, smart border walls, and all the things that they 30 seconds ago were screaming is bad because Great Reset, but now because Israel, we love it, or because immigration, we want it. It's a ridiculous conversation, and I'm not calling out every Republican, every conservative, because I'm not stupid. I don't broad stroke entire groups of people, but there are a lot of them that are falling for this, and a lot of them that are calling it out. But it's an agenda focused on that, and there's things on both sides of the illusion doing that. This is one from Florida. You know, the Trump alternative. Florida smart ID. We'll look at that. This is not new. I just want to make sure you understand that this is very clear and this is happening in every possible way, but from different angles. Over here, it's about the safety of the road. And you know, this is about basically a Florida smart ID app. It's a secure version of your driver's license. Well, it's just a digital ID, guys. It's another way to manipulate you into getting it. Over here, it's because of immigration. Over here, it's because I don't want to wait in line for the airport. Over here, I mean, we've seen all of these. All of it amounts to biometric scans, liberty lost, and digital IDs, which lead to the same things we were all worried about, vaccine, passport, the whole thing during COVID-19 illusion. But suddenly they don't care. What that means is the ones that suddenly don't care are either not bright enough to see it or never cared in the first place. I just hope other Republicans can see that. And I really do think many of them do. Here's another interesting point. Somebody posted this below under Whitney and I's conversation. This is Bannon. You know, the guy who wants you to think that, and, you know, and look, and I'm the first person that will tell you, oh, you know, I'm one of the people that will tell you that China and Russia and the rest of the governments are not on your side. I do not believe that. I don't believe any of these governments are actively fighting. I should say fighting for the interest of people because they want to fight for the interest of people. I think often, even for the U.S. government, sometimes their actions happen to align with the interest of people. My point is, I don't think any of them truly care about the interest of the people. That's my opinion. I could be jaded. I could be a pessimist, but I think history is clear. My point in saying that is, here's a person who is going, China, 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 China's the only problem. Not really. I'm oversimplifying it, but he has an aggressive focus on China. And quite frankly, I think there's obvious examples to show you that at the very least right now in the world, that's not the biggest problem we're focused with. But, you know, clearly they're the aggressive in the direction of their social engineering, of their social credit, of their surveillance system. But they're trying to do the same thing. And that's the whole point. Look at what he has written on his wall behind him here. It literally says, and this is a checklist I believe was from when he was in office, finally complete the biometric entry visa, basically the smart wall, using biometrics and biometric visas for travel, which means for you. And just in case you're worried that I just blindly assumed that was real, I don't do that. You guys know that. Now, and also, I'm also not blindly believing it's real because CNN posted it, but it is. It's a real picture from 2017. Showing his objectives in the background. So all that really shows you is there's a very clear push from a lot of strong Republican leaders, if you want to use that word, for exactly the things that we are all scared about, including most Republicans. It's sort of like the way that a lot of them seem to blindly support Trump for president, despite the fact that almost all of them don't think that the vaccine was something that helped anybody, and he still supports that. Oh, and just on that note, Generally, the point is, I think what's important to see is that this is a building narrative and we need to resist it. That's just the real point. I want people to remember that this is happening and they're trying to circumvent your logic by using partisan wedge issues like immigration, like we played the other day. Or I forget her name, but she was saying, I just want to use my clear ID at the airport. Why can't we do that for voting? It's like, well, maybe because it's a violation of your rights or because it removes your liberties or because it is a personal choice. And your biometrics are your property, or the idea that there's 1,000 ways they could manipulate that. Or, I mean, go on forever. We talked about this a long time. It's one step in the process of a lot of other dark things. I wanted to ask this, by the way, before we got started. Okay. Who else is getting a million messages from spam messages about election stuff? I hope it's only me, because that would probably line up with what I think about the world. Because right now, I swear to you, I'm getting probably 10 of these a day. Every single time I get them, I block the number and I delete the message. It takes a half a second. It doesn't really bother me. I just think it's interesting how this is happening so incessantly. Same with Twitter, by the way. All these sex bots under all of the Palestinian content, not surprising there. And then they use that as a justification to suppress and blind, because why? Because somebody else commented something that they don't like under your post. It's just it's a clear pro-Zionist Israel manipulation that Elon has blindly taken in stride, like a lot of the things we'll talk about. But what's interesting is I'm getting inundated with these. This just says from Trump. Hey, do you need a job? Do you want advice? Or the next one says from Trump's sister, or from this one's from Mike Pence, or whatever it is. And I keep getting them. So tell me what you think. If you get these, I think this is interesting. And why is this being allowed? And how come I block one and I get 45 the next day? Like, it's a really, I feel like this is a targeted thing. But you guys tell me. I just want to throw that out there. Let me know if you guys are seeing like an overwhelming amount of spam messages on your texts because of the election or whatever else. Now, this is the same point, not sort of. Elon Musk shared this. It's not even about him personally. I think this is an important point to make clear. He says the axiomatic error undermining much of the Western civilization, or much of Western civilization, is, quote, weak makes right. It's an interesting statement. I disagree with the overall point. He says if someone accepts explicitly or implicitly that the oppressed are always the good guys, then the natural conclusion is that the strong are always the bad guys. Now, that's one side of a true statement. I agree with that part, half of it. The other side of it would be the exact reverse, right? If you always assume that the strong are, right? It's, but the point, though, is that it's what's the right word for it? It is a, well, let's just put it this way. I can't think of the word that actually fits it, but it's a half-truth. Because the reality is, I don't think the argument is the weak makes right. I think what they're fighting for in a lot of people's minds is that people are oppressed. Not that being oppressed makes them the good guy. It means that it's irrelevant, right? Because you're being oppressed. So you have to realize, like, just because we may argue that you're weak or strong or a criminal or not, it doesn't change the fact that your rights are being oppressed. That somebody is, and this is the reality of, it's not because Iran suddenly we don't care that laws don't apply, that they're U.S., that laws should apply to you or not. What's my point about the U.S. foreign policy in Israel and so on? Well, because Hamas or X, Y, and Z, our laws don't apply. That's not how that works. So my point is, it's if they're oppressed, we should care and stand for them. Not because you don't like them, we should ignore that they're being oppressed, or that we only stand up for the oppressed that are on the right side of what you think is the right thing. And not, it's just not him, it's anybody. So this is a frustrating reality, because what this ultimate, when you frame it like this, what's the logical conclusion of the people that agree with him? Well, that might makes right. Right? It's the exact opposite. And that's exactly what the U.S. government and a lot of the Republican mindset is. Might makes right. We're powerful. We can fight for what's ours. And they don't have a right to attack. I mean, it's the idea is that this is not what we pretend we're fighting for. We should be fighting for rules-based international order, not based on what they're lying about, not in a forceful way that means you have to adhere to some other government's mindset, but just the idea that we apply logic, integrity, morality to general concepts between other countries, and we generally guide by those things, like international human rights, like the idea that people can't be removed from their home without any justification and then displaced and never given. Like, this is what we're talking about. Just because that guy might have been a criminal doesn't mean his rights weren't violated. So I just think this is a crazy thing that we're seeing, where we're starting to try to almost flip the coin to say, well, just because they're weak doesn't make them right. It's a strange thing to me. And it feels inherently dishonest, quite frankly. But, oh, actually, here, I didn't see this one before. Oh, here's interesting. This is interesting. A lot of people that I think would normally agree with him. I'm not pointing at any one of them. But here's what Tiberius says. That's the most transparently stupid thing you've said in a while. He says, and there's a growing list. He says, conflating strength and oppressive power is idiotic to begin with. And that's, eloquently said exactly what I was trying to fumbling through right there. Good, well done, Tiberius. And the point is that it's creating the illusion that these people are not oppressed in a backward way. But it says Joe Biden has massive oppressive power right now, and he is an incredibly weak man who uses a corrupt empire and the tyranny of brute force led by other men to achieve his ends. Your argument is a childish and stupid attempt at to legitimize might is right. There you go. Exactly what I was trying to say. the exertion of power that has been historically accumulated via a collection of mostly illegitimate means as being somehow an indicator of moral virtue. He says a considered teenager who has read a few books, would destroy this argument in less than a minute, but your argument isn't based on any reasonable philosophical underpinning. It's a paper-thin and completely transparent attempt to legitimize oppression. When you feel that the oppressed deserve it because their values do not align with your own. Anyone reading this, beware. Musk is arguing in favor of centralized power and oppression. He's arguing for a less free world. Well said, man. And damn it, that's exactly what's happening. But again, even if you don't, even if he doesn't realize that, because I think, quite frankly, in a lot of ways, he's being played by these powers. Here's what Ian Carroll said. Actually, Elon, not bombing civilians, women, and children makes right. So the natural conclusion is that whoever does that is the bad guys. Yeah, exactly. Much more simple way to say also what I was trying to say. Your idea was cute, though. Nice try. Right? The idea just simply being that it's not about weak or might. It's about oppressed. No matter what your stance is, if you're oppressed, you should be, that should be called out. I think that's pretty simple. Now, on that point, I also wanted to highlight censorship, which is also happening on Twitter, by the way, in an aggressive way, in more ways than I think I've seen in a long time. We just got censored on Instagram. We showed you Facebook, which is Facebook is similar. And again, I'm not complaining about censorship. That ship has sailed. We are far more censored than anybody I've ever seen in my life. I think that's pretty verifiable today. But I wanted to highlight the same dynamic as before. And funny enough, this was the image. And in fact, the act shot they took here was from the conversation of the baby in an oven, which is a objectively false story that's been proven by Haaretz and other Israeli media. But yet they again go remove. We removed your content because it's a lie. Well, guess what it says again? You shared or sent symbols, praise, or support for people or organizations they define as dangerous. How in the world are you making this argument? In fact, I'm calling out the people doing the dangerous things. And on top of that, I'm not then going, and I support Hamas. I'm not doing that because I don't. So I just find it strange that they think they can just, you know, but again, it's they don't care. It's unaccountable. And we know that by now. But I wanted to show you this part more than anything. Same old excuse. But here's your request to review. You get five choices. It says, why do you want another review? I can't be like, because you're incorrect or because you're lying about what I said. It said, here are your choices. The restriction is too harsh. You misunderstood my content. My content doesn't break the rules, which is what I went with. Content like mine should be allowed. Something else, which I guess something else you can go with, but that's just meaningless in a review. And so I hit that. And then here's what it says. What should we know about your content? And these are the choices you get. It was to raise awareness. It was about an important issue. It's not offensive in my region, which implies that it is elsewhere. I was responding to someone else. It was a joke. None of those things apply. And even remotely in an abstract way apply to what I would say to defend what, because they know that. They're trying to basically make you admit that you kind of did something wrong, but you weren't aware. And then again, that's my choices that I ended up going with. It just simply says, we'll get back to you. And that AI was the what decided. Just find that relevant. Oh, and then by the way, I was going to play my Adam Green interview today through Instagram, and now they will no longer let me live stream. I think that was the ultimate issue, guys. At this time, your account is not eligible for this feature. Of course. Rock and roll. Not like they were letting it go anywhere anyway. Okay. So let's start with the UNRWA conversation that I think is really important. Israel yet to provide evidence of UNRWA staff terrorist links. This was Politico, written on April 22nd. Just yet again, acknowledging that they still haven't provided evidence. They provided a whole lot of conjecture, a whole lot of subjective claims that they then pretend is complete proven, you know, evidence and completely proven, which right there should make you go, so they don't give evidence when they say that they give it. Yes, they lie. Shocking, I know. I mean, we should know this by now. It's very, very clear.
Let me preface these remarks with I never, never, ever believe Israeli figures. I've been in the government too long to know that the Israelis are patent liars.
Uh-huh. Not the only one that thinks that. Now, I'm only showing this to make you sure you've seen already that this is this has been stated openly for weeks now, even longer, by corporate media, and yet there's still some people that act like this is proven. It's hilariously stupid, which shows you that they're compromised or too dumb to know, which is pretty crazy. Now, here is what's important. Gabriel Elizondo, who is a correspondent for Al Jazeera, highlights what was posted by a senior global reporter at DevEx and Foreign Policy, Washington Post, and so on, when it says, just sending this along without comment or analysis. This is the latest word. This is posted today. The latest word from UN internal investigation into allegations UNRWA participated in October 7th mass killings. It says, we have some information to share about the investigation into allegations made by Israel that some staff members were, you know, part of Hamas. The group has been investigating 19 staff members that and the 12 we were informed of in January. They're the ones that they originally called out before it got cartoonish and became like 500 people that they couldn't confirm their name. It became tangential. If they were in the same WhatsApp group, if they had a phone call with this person one day, it got really, you know, the whole thing is cartoonish, but that got absurd. But it says whose contacts were terminated by UNRWA before they even proved anything, just to show you they were serious about concern, even allegations. And that wasn't enough. It says, and seven more that we have since received information about. Five of them in March and two in April. First, it says, I want to talk about the initial group of 12 staffers. Of that group, eight members remain under their investigation. One case was closed as no evidence was provided by Israel to support the allegations. We are exploring corrective administrative action to be taken in that person's case. Also, three cases were suspended as the information provided by Israel. So what they actually gave them claiming it proved it was not sufficient for the investigation, meaning they did not provide evidence, they provided conjecture. UNRWA is considering what administrative action to take while they're under investigation. Regarding the seven cases that were brought to our attention since January, one case has also been suspended pending receipt of additional supporting evidence. The remaining six are currently under investigation by the group. They say they have informed us that the investigation had traveled to Israel for discussions with Israeli authorities and will undertake a visit. This is recent. Imagine that being the current reality of a month-long action that created, rather that wildly intensified the famine that they knew would intensify the famine. That's why this happened, and we're going to get to that. But Gabriel writes, just an internal UN investigation on Israeli claims 12 UNRWA staff took part in October 7th. They've concluded only one UNRWA employee whose contract was terminated under allegations has been cleared and the case closed due to no evidence provided by Israel. UN is considering corrective action. Four other cases are suspended as there is not sufficient evidence provided. Also looking into corrective action, the other cases are still being investigated by the UN. Initially, 12 UNRWA employees were terminated. Four have now been exonerated. So right there, you have to realize that they lied about these people. Now, of course, the UN could be lying, but you have to realize that we have gone through this. Israel, in my opinion, never provided any sound, provable evidence, or let's just say proof. They provided lots of data points that were conjecture and subjective and saying because they were here at this point in time, because they had this phone call, because they have this shirt on, like really that kind of stuff, that they are Hamas, even though that's not a proof. That's not proof at all. Eight remain under investigation. Since then, seven more allegations, cases have been brought to the UN by Israel. One of those has been suspended due to lack of evidence. So it just continues like this. He goes, and he just recaps the overall point, which means, guys, they're lying about this stuff, which is very obvious. And the overall point is that even the governments that are ostensibly on the side of Israel have started to fund UNRWA again. But you know what? But the problem is that doesn't stop it doesn't remove what they created, which is the famine that is going to take a lot more than just more aid coming in now to stop. Which is the whole point about a real, not just being hungry, not even just starving, but famine. Level 5, the highest level famine by the people that are paid what's the right word for it? The groups that literally research and discuss famine and levels of starvation. They've come out and said, this is level 5, the worst we've seen. Right? That's the reality. And they also said that you don't just dump food on them. That's not going to solve this problem. They need more than just food. And that's why that just dumping the food, even though they're not doing that, is not going to solve it. Netherlands will consider resuming support to Palestine UNRWA agency. Germany, which is the largest one that kind of shocked me, to resume funding to UNRWA. April 24th. Australia. Shocking. These are groups that are still, I mean, even some of them giving weapons still to Israel. Resume funding to UNRWA. So you have to realize that Israel is, I mean, this is them playing politics. They very clearly know the world sees what they're doing. So this is, I guess, trying to make it seem like they're not, while still blindly supporting Israel, who then goes on to bomb UNRWA, right? Five countries pledged to resume funding to UNRWA. More countries continue resuming funding. I mean, this is not going their way. Now, this is where it gets very important, in my opinion, about the larger point. Point about UNRWA as well, food aid as well. But the larger reality that the Biden administration and really just the U.S. government blindly support are in lockstep with the Israeli government's agendas, the real agendas in Gaza. The real agendas, the occupation, the entire area, building illegal settlements in Gaza, the displacement of everybody, the murdering of civilians, the bombing of civilian buildings, hospitals, churches, schools. Yes. Now, shout out to Greg Mayberry, for highlighting this and tagging me in it. He says, friends, must read commentary update from Craig Murray on events and developments in the Middle East and the wider repercussions. He entitled the article, which we'll read to you some of it, Worse Than You Can Imagine. Now, that's from the article we'll read in a second. He also shares with Netanyahu the aim of a wider regional conflict in which basically the Biden agrees with all of it. Now, I'll just want to shout out Greg for sharing this, and I'll read the article itself. This is from his website. Worse Than You Can Imagine, posted today. Governments cannot take big decisions extremely quickly, except in the most extreme of circumstances. Now, that's just, you know, what they're supposed to do anyway. There are mechanisms in all states that consider policy decisions, weigh them up, involve the various departments of the state whose activities are affected by that decision, and arrive at a conclusion, though not necessarily a good one. The decision to stop aid funding to UNRWA was not taken by numerous Western states in a single day. Now, there's more nuance to that. The point overall is what he's saying is that this was not something that was casually decided. This was obviously the implication as well is that this was more planned than we realize. And I agree with that. But that this had to go through a process. And not just one country, but all of these countries, all the ones from Canada, Germany, Israel, the United States, Australia, they had to go through their processes or that they just disregarded them. In any case, we're supposed to believe they went through those. And it didn't just take one day. He says, consider that the parallel process had to be completed in the United States, Canada, Germany, Australia, and all other Western powers that contributed to starvation in Gaza by cutting aid to UNRWA, which was the point. All of these countries had to go through their procedures, and it could only be by prior coordination, right? Because he says it happens on the same day. Are we to pretend that they all coordinated and or they all concluded their processes in the exact same moment? You have to realize how coordinated this is. He says, and it could only be prior coordination, weeks in advance. That's disgusting. Between these states that they announced, and by the way, at a time when they're even now forced to admit they never had evidence. So what was the process? What did they think they had? Or did they not even care? I think you know. He says, between these states, they announced all on the same day the destruction of the life support system for Palestinians. Then in absolute need. And then consider that we now know for certain that the Israelis had produced no evidence whatsoever of UNRWA complicity in Hamas resistance, on which these decisions in all those states were allegedly based. I have no doubt, he says, at all, that the Western political elite, paid tools of the Zionist machine, are complicit in the genocide of Palestinians and ethnic cleansing of Gaza at a much deeper level than the people have yet understood. The refusal by Starmer and Sunak in the UK to contemplate ending arms sales and military support to Israel is not due to inertia or concern for the arms industry. It is that they actively support the destruction of the Palestinians. Well, I agree. I think it's both. But his point is, it doesn't have to be that they're just doing it for the good of the country or the arms industry. It's because they literally believe in what they're doing in Palestine. Frankly, I agree with that. I think we have a lot of very dangerous Zionist infiltration that over decades have either paid off or influenced and put people in positions, which, by the way, is exactly the time to reference the interview I had with David Icke around the historical background of Zionism, and this is what they do. He says the coordinated decision of the Western nations to fast-track famine, which is what they did, by stopping UNRWA funding, was announced within an hour, following, believe it or not, the International Court of Justice ruling that Gazans were at immediate risk of genocide and drove from the media headlines the adverse ruling against Israel. Now, I should point out, by the way, that there was a recent post put out by one of the people from the ICJ that is making a very irritating nuance, saying that what they did find merit in was what is ultimately that the South Africans' claims about Palestinians, that they didn't do anything, that they might ultimately end up in a genocide, and arguing that's not the same as saying there's merit for the genocide, which I find to be a pretty ridiculous semantic difference. Clearly, if you're arguing there's merit in the fact that if they do nothing, that they might end up in a genocide means there's merit to a genocide. Either way, I don't think anybody with a brain can dispute that there's clearly, I mean, if you don't like the word genocide, let's just be clear and say there's crimes being committed. There are war crimes being committed. There are murdering children. So let's be clear about what's going on. But that's just to be objective about what she recently put out. I think that's important. It says, this sent the clearest signal in response that the Western powers would not be stopped from the genocide by international law or institutions, which is very clear. This genocide, he writes, is the desired goal of the West, which shouldn't surprise you when you understand the reality behind these, like Rwanda, like Bosnia, and the Israeli involvement in both, and the U.S. overlap of both. No other explanation is remotely plausible, he writes. He says, I have never believed the spin that Biden is trying to restrain Netanyahu while simultaneously arming and funding Netanyahu and using U.S. forces to fight alongside him, which he is. People still deny that. It's public information. Troops on the ground. Axios covered the fact that there was a three-star general on the ground helping advise their actions. I mean, this is a U.S. war, guys, alongside Israel. It says, my reading of this was reinforced when I looked back at the Israeli murders on the Mavi Marmara in 2010. When they killed, not just October 7th, in 2010, when they killed 10 unarmed aid workers attempting a freedom flotilla aid delivery to Gaza. Which, by the way, I keep pointing this out, there are some that apparently are claiming, I think it was one with Nelson Mandela's son or something, a family member that was supposed to be coming to try to bring food to Gaza. I'm interested to see what happens there. I can guarantee you they won't let them come in. They wouldn't let them come in before this. Now they're not going to let them come in. And even more, it's obvious they need more than ever. But my point is, in 2010, they murdered aid workers. Just nobody cared like they do today. People in power, look, nobody was really screaming about it other than the typical human rights groups that sometimes say something. And so they just didn't do anything. Today, enough of us are standing up that they feel forced to do something, or at least look like they're doing something. And that, my friends, is the power of the people. If we actually look past the childish and arbitrary two-party illusion game. But it says, Israel's actions were clearly both murderous and in breach of international law, then and today. Joe Biden, as vice president, defended Israel staunchly then. Surprise, surprise. It is essential to understand that Genocide Joe has always been Genocide Joe. As it writes, back then, Joe Biden took the lead in defending the raid to the U.S. public. In an interview with PBS, he described the raid as legitimate. You know, the murder of 10 unarmed aid workers. Legitimate. It's like saying, we think it's worth it. Because they really do. And argued that the flotilla organized could have disembarked elsewhere. Think about making that argument. So a freedom flotilla of unarmed aid workers bringing food because they could have gotten off elsewhere. It's their fault Israel murdered them. Doesn't that sound very similar to, you know, the Palestinians could have gotten out of the way? They chose to vote for Hamas. Yeah, it's the same damn game. It's just sad that people couldn't pay attention till now or didn't know because they're paying attention to the wrong people. It says, so what's the big deal here? He says, what's the big deal of insisting to go straight to Gaza? Biden asked about the humanitarian mission. Well, it's legitimate for Israel to say, I don't know what's on that ship. These guys are dropping 3,000 rockets on my people. Oh, they are? No, some group in Gaza is. You know, a group that's legitimately resisting an occupied territory, occupied power. But to just conflate all of that, yeah, it's the same thing today. He says, Murray continues, Biden is not being outplayed by Netanyahu. He is actively abetting Netanyahu and shares with him the objective of full Israeli occupation of Gaza after the Palestinian people are killed or expelled into Sinai or elsewhere. As I understand it, they started building that ridiculous pier that is going to be managed by Israel and the development of aid through it. So it's no different. And it's all a big lie and scam, just like before, seeing as how it's a plan that they've already wanted long before October 7th. And it's Netanyahu's plan to begin with, as it's already been revealed. So here we are again with the U.S. government just being a lackey of whatever Israel wants to do in this case. I mean, it's ridiculous. The pier is only arguably being built because they need aid to come through. And why do they need it? Because they're blocking it elsewhere. That's ridiculous. Then on top of that, who's going to help process the aid? Israel. That's been publicly stated. So if the whole point is we can't get aid through because of Israel, we need to build a pier, why are you letting Israel then process it? Because it's the game. And they do not want it to come through, but they want the pier for many other reasons. So they just lied to you. And plenty of good people thought they were doing the right thing, and plenty of liars did care. That's the reality. But he goes on to say he also shares with Netanyahu the aim of a wider regional conflict in which the U.S. and Gulf states ally with Israel against Iran, Syria, Yemen, and Hezbollah. All right, so they both want a larger war. Doesn't that seem like what's actually happening? It says this is their joint vision of the Middle East. Greater Israel, U.S. hegemony, operating through the Sunni monarchs. Just like we've talked about for a long time, the Sunni, the divide, the Sunni-Shiite divide. Right? I mean, this is something that is like, this is why partly this is a religious war, not just because of Israel's dynamic, but because of what they've been doing in regard to Israel, Iran and plenty of others. Meanwhile, completely ignoring the Wahhabist maniacs in Saudi Arabia that are the basis for all of the things that they point out around terrorism in the world, but are their chief ally in the Middle East, because that makes sense, right? It does when you realize that they actively are protecting the terrorist groups they claim they're fighting and working with and funding and arming, and we'll get into that in a second. But it says, if you believe all the spin from the White House about Biden trying to restrain Netanyahu, I suggest you look instead at the White House and State Department spokesman refusing, as we've shown you many times, to accept any, if you can believe that, single instance of Israel atrocities and deferring to Israel on every single crime. We will look into that and we'll ask Israel and our counterparts and we'll stress they need to follow international law every single time. And we just saw one of the worst. Can you believe everything you've seen? 15,000 plus children, and they're still pretending like we can't see any crimes? My God. He writes, I am currently in Pakistan, and I must say it has been a great refreshment to be in a country where everybody understands why ISIS, al-Nusra, etc., never attacked Israeli interests. Craig Murray gets it. And he goes on to say, and sees precisely what Western governments are doing over Gaza. What is understood by developing nations is thankfully understood by Gen Z in the West as well. In case you missed it, his point is there's a reason ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, Hamas, these groups that, well, in the case of historically, in regard to what we know they funded and so on, but just specifically his point is that these groups have never attacked Israel. Or talking about the idea of what we just said about Iran, right? We just talked about that. The idea that Iran, at the same time that Israel's pointing out Iran is the bad guy, even though that's not the case in this context, ISIS attacks Iran right when they start pointing at him. I mean, it's the most, I mean, I think I can actually grab that. I think I remember how the tweet went. Let's see. It was this one. That's not the one. Whatever. I don't remember. The point was, it just, when are we going to start to realize what this really shows us, right? The obvious reality, I think it might even be one here or somewhere close. I've got one right here. This is the one in regard to ISIS attacking just enemies of the U.S. government. ISIS conducts new attack on the army positions in Syria, right? They are, we're told anyway. Could be Mossad for all we know. The point is that they just attacked Iran too. And I wrote, and just like that, ISIS suddenly starts attacking the enemies of Israel and the U.S. government again. Completely by coincidence, of course, as usual, after being 100% defeated a few times. And I said, and for those somehow unsure of the point I'm making, I highly recommend this three-part documentary series on the origins of Al-Qaeda, ISIS, false flags, the secret history of Al-Qaeda, and the reality that James Corbett has nailed this to the wall with receipts that prove to you that the U.S. government's completely involved, complicit, arming, funding, working with the groups we're talking about. It's just that people are afraid to talk about it, just like the reality of anti-Semitism, Zionism, the whole thing that is finally being broken down. At one point in the future, people will finally start to, you know, those that haven't, acknowledge this is just unfortunately the reality and that we don't live in the world we think we do. We can. It's up to us. But that's important, which means it's just like funding Hamas, that this is the group responsible for what we're discussing. And if you're going to pretend that Hamas is the biggest boogeyman in the world and all the different things they're highlighting, well, then you have to, at the very least, acknowledge Israel is responsible for that in part. Same with the U.S. government, but no, it's not what's happening. He goes on to say the anti-Iranian card is, of course, the trick both Biden and Netanyahu have left to play, which we've already seen start. By promoting an escalation with Iran, Western politicians were able to default to a position of claiming the case for arming Israel is proven. And I think, he writes, we're genuinely perplexed to find the public did not buy it. I agree with that. Their mirage is no longer working. The political class, he writes, across the Western world and the Arab world is utterly divorced from its people over Gaza, which is important. This is what I'm highlighting. The peoples of the world, by and large, are not buying this. And that's powerful, guys. We can do something with that. That is real. That's organic. That's grassroots. That's what it really looks like. Now, I'm sure people disagree with that. I'm sure somebody out there thinks we're taking the bait for something, and maybe they're right. Can question everything. I personally feel it's quite obvious that there is a real change happening here, or at least the possibility for one. He writes, we are seeing worldwide repression as peaceful conferences are stormed by police in Germany. Students are beaten by police on American campuses. And in the UK, old white people like him, or he writes, like me, suffer the kind of continual harassment long suffered by young Muslim men. He writes, this is not the work of Netanyahu operating as a rogue. It is the result of the machinations of a professional political class across the Western world welded to Zionism, with the supremacy of Israel as an article of fundamental belief. I mean, my God, how is that not obvious? Every statement. He writes, times are not this dark by accident. They were designed to be this dark. It's powerful. Now, if you didn't see our show yesterday, I highly recommend you check it out because we discuss, actually, I think I might be able to grab right here. We discuss at the end, which I recommend you check out, a great, great article and speech given by Naomi Klein. And it is very powerful. I think it's right here. I'll include the actual article so you can read it for yourself. And just to see that this is on The Guardian. We need an exodus from Zionism. Guys, there is change happening. As always, without fail, when there is change, especially when it's change against the narrative and against the direction of the controllers, the social engineers, they have already tried to start co-opting it. They've already tried, just like they're seeing with the Republicans and the biometric conversation. They've already begun. They probably began right when this started, guys. So we need to always be on guard, question everything, right? As Asal Rod points out, story gets out that Blinken is ignoring Israeli human rights abuses. Then a PR story appears that Biden is going to do something. Israel publicly acts outraged that laws may apply to them. Biden admin quietly decides to do nothing. What a perfect summary of this administration. Or the government, more specifically. Or I guess more broadly. The point is, this is just the dynamic. This is how it goes. April 18th, Biden ignored agencies' recommendations to disqualify some Israeli units, which it's really the IDF in general, quite frankly. But what we're seeing is that this was the one battalion that was identified as the really bad one. I think this was a way to try to let some steam out, like they cared. I mean, even then, they backed away at the end anyway. The point was, we're going to sanction them because they're bad guys. And they got pushback and they go, well, never mind. It's just pathetic. Now, in regard to one of the points Craig Murray made, I wanted to make sure we highlight the interview we just had with Adam Green, Religious Prophecies in Israel, Zionism versus Judaism, and Abrahamic Religions. Now, great interview. Very contentious for a lot of people. Plenty of stuff that Adam and I don't agree on, right? And I think what's important is that we have these conversations, that we're willing to discuss these things, especially when we disagree. And I think what's important here is the idea, as Craig Murray was pointing out, but these aren't dark times just by accident, right? There are clear, and Adam Green has been researching this forever. These religious prophecies, man, it is not a joke. Now, whether you believe or not is sort of irrelevant because they believe them, and I believe that. And that's terrifying because of what they believe this accomplishes. And as these people are pointing at everybody under the sun and saying, they're the ones that are going to overthrow the world, should we let them do anything? When there's no evidence of that whatsoever, you can very clearly see these people standing up and just look at the Greater Israel Project, guys. They have designs to take over countries right around them already. Azov movement, which they openly support, is actively telling people that when they're done, they're going to spread the white race around the world and take over all these countries. All of their allies seem to be the ones doing that while they point at anybody else. Look at the U.S. government, pretend there's anybody else doing that. But make sure you check the interview out. I think it's great. And we're going to connect again because I think this is important. One of the things we really get into is what you'd expect. The conversation about Zionism, Judaism, in my opinion, about the history around that. But of course, I'm very open to hear his perspectives. And he gets into some very interesting historical overlaps that suggest that there might even be Jewish groups that were foundational before that and so on. It's interesting. Listen to it. I still firmly believe that we're talking about a Zionist manipulation overall, simply because, as we both seem to agree, there are easily provably Jews that do not believe in Zionism and do not believe in the prophecies and so on. So even if you argue it's all about Judaism alone, that's the problem, which I disagree with, it's still clear that not every Jew in the world believes that. So broad stroking, I think, is always a problem. And I think we both agree on that. Either way, it's an important conversation that we need to keep having because this stuff is happening right in front of us. It is not hyperbole. And they do support these very groups. They are funding and advocating for, well, I guess not openly in many cases, but absolutely supporting the worst entities around the world. They're the ones pointing at, with using manipulators like Loomer out there screaming about how Islam is the problem, even though, and I know she knows this, these very people have funded the worst elements of that very discussion for decades. It's a very obviously provable fact. I mean, we talked about Hamas. We can prove they funded Hamas. So how in the world are you pretending like that's not the primary issue? It's embarrassing, like we'll get into in a minute. Oh, and I'll include this as well, by the way. Zionism versus Nazism, discussing the obvious provable historical overlaps there that Dan Cohen has covered, that they literally aligned themselves with the Nazi Party even after the Final Solution began. And it's just, it's we live in a lie, guys. The reality of the history is documented. Israel's connection to extremist ideology and ADL's history of faking Nazi marches. Exactly provable, written by the New York Times, guys. It's obvious you can see this stuff. Now, going off Craig Murray's post, here's what Forbes wrote today, which just shows you that this is falling apart in front of them. Even the corporate media that I still argue are little, just simply assets for the most part, or can be, of the empire, are calling it out. You can decide why, but I agree with what they're saying. It says, what if the State Department was allowed to do its job on Israel and Gaza? It says the Biden administration's policy on supplying arms to Israel is a walking contradiction, something we should all very clearly acknowledge. Same with the Azov movement, by the way. Funding the Azov movement, giving them weapons, which, by the way, I wasn't going to get into, but apparently they just allotted another $6 billion to Ukraine just because. It's like, is that how the democracy works? Then we just pass a bill and they're like, there's $6 billion more because, you know, we need to support their Nazi work. But either way, the point is contradictions. On the other hand, he writes, the Netanyahu government has killed over 34,000 people, far more than that, many of them children, dropped 2,000-pound dumb bombs on civilian apartment complexes, blocked the delivery of food, water, and medical supplies, and possibly buried victims in its murderous violence in mass graves. That is the second paragraph of this article written by a mainstream journalist for Forbes. And aren't we supposed to believe that every one of those things are fake news? Isn't that what our government's telling us? Isn't that what Israel's screaming about? I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? They're all true, and we can prove it. It says, meanwhile, the International Court of Justice has said that it is plausible, again, the same point I said before, that Israel is perpetrating a genocide in Gaza, which is self-evident. The truth is that whether one calls it a genocide or war crimes, it is a disproportionate response to the horrific Hamas attacks of October 7th. The conduct of the IDF in Gaza is unconscionable and must be stopped. Regardless of what you think about October 7th or whether it's a genocide, that is a true statement. It says, in the midst of all this, the Biden administration officials continue to reassure us that they are doing everything in their power. Nobody buys it, but they keep saying it, to get Israel to observe U.S. laws on the use of U.S.-supplied weapons, as well as to limit civilian casualties. Meanwhile, they continue to send billions of dollars in weapons to an outlaw state. Interesting they framed it like that, I agree, that has shown a chilling indifference to human life. And this gets into the interesting discussion, which we haven't really talked about, the National Security Memorandum 20. One possible hook for a change in policy in the administration's release of National Security Memorandum 20, or NSM 20, which calls upon U.S. arms recipients to sign a piece of paper promising that they won't break the law, which just seems so childishly stupid to me, seeing as how none of these people care about anything. But it goes on to say, it also has a provision for the State Department to investigate whether a recipient is in fact following U.S. law on issues like human rights and allowing the free flow of humanitarian aid. But obviously you can expect that there's a caveat here, and I think it's interesting to see that this was used almost in a way as like a stopgap. But it says NSM 20 is a strange document for several reasons. First, it appears that it was not issued primarily to strengthen the application of U.S. law to U.S. arms clients, which is, I mean, the only thing you can pretend that this what they're saying it is, right? If it's not that, then there's a lot of dishonesty here, which is the case. It says, but rather to preempt Congress from debating an amendment by Senator Chris Van Hollen that would have covered much of the same ground. So what they really did was pass this flimsy bill, or rather a memorandum, that basically made it look like they were going to try to stop them, but all Israel should do is go, yep, signed, I agree, and then not do it. But there's another mechanism to it, but that's the first part. And so what then they staved off by doing that is the actual public on the record videoed conversation about how this is happening. That's what they wanted to avoid. Guys, your government is not on your side. It says the release of NSM-20 appeared to be more of a tactical political move than a genuine attempt to hold Israel or any other nation accountable for using U.S. arms to commit extreme human rights abuses. Because if you realize this, if you look at the groups that monitor these things, the U.S. government funds and arms the worst and most dangerous groups in the world over anybody. It's routinely pointed out. They just lie about it. It says if the president wants to condition or stop arms transfers to Israel because of its crimes to Gaza, he can do so tomorrow. He could if he wanted to, without the need to justify it under the terms of the NSM-20. But it says under NSM-20, the administration is obligated to report on Israel's use of U.S. weapons in Gaza. But we know how that can easily be lied about. They can just lie in general, not even do it, give a justification. But it says the report is due on May 8th. I guess we'll watch for that. I'm not gonna hold my breath for something that matters. In fact, that's what he says. Don't hold your breath, waiting for an objective assessment that would set the stage from conditioning of or cutting off U.S. military aid to Israel. It seems as if the Biden administration has already prejudged the case. Shocking. At the end of March, before the required investigation of Israel's use of U.S. weapons in Gaza, State Department spokesperson, who we've talked about a lot, Matt Miller, said, quote, "And I hope this goes down in history as one of the most, I hope he gets charged for complicity in genocide for statements like this. We have not found them, Israel, to be in violation of international humanitarian law, either when it comes to the conduct of the war or when it comes to the provision of humanitarian assistance. So they're not doing anything wrong." Do you realize the weight that statement has for average people when you can prove 1,000 crimes individually and institutionally? I mean, it's shocking that they think that's not going to harm them. I hope that I'm right, because that means if they're right and it doesn't harm them, then we're in a far worse position than even I think. But it says one of the members of the independent task force is somebody we've talked about, Josh Paul, who resigned from this is sort of out of context. The point is they're discussing an independent task force that was from before, above this, and they're simply saying one of the members of that task force was Josh Paul, who has resigned since then from the state after determining that the administration had no intention of holding Israel to the letter of the law, which is what he's been saying since. It says the primary findings of the task force's report from before he resigned, were that Israel's actions in Gaza before and during the genocide of today involve a, quote, systematic disregard for fundamental principles of international law. That, quote, raises grave concerns regarding the Biden administration's compliance with both U.S. and international law. The task force backs up its judgments, not just him, but the group, with a series of specific examples, including the following. An October 31st, 2023 IDF airstrike on a six-story apartment building near the Nusrat refugee camp in central Gaza that killed at least 106 civilians, including 54 children. But of course, they looked at that and said, "You're crazy, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're racist, so just never mind, you're fired. Or you resign and we'll call you disgraced." I mean, think about denying something like that. I mean, again, I've shown you this a million times. Here's the Amnesty article from October 20th. Showing you that they proved evidence of war crimes wiping out entire families, that they did not try to remove civilians. They aimed at civilians in many cases. And the point is that that's exactly what Forbes is finding. That's what their own task force found. And what they do? Ignored. It's not like they had some follow-up report that said otherwise. They just didn't care. That's wild. Now, let's not forget, by the way. Oh, here, let me delete some of these real quick. Let's not forget, by the way, what he was telling us. The reality of what he was showing us, that there is a lot darker realities behind this that had to do with some pretty disgusting things, like rape of children. That's this clip. Now we'll show you this next. First of all, well, I guess since I mentioned that, let's play this one first. This is the older one. This is what he said, I believe this was posted on December 4th. I believe it was before that. Either way, after he resigned, he gave you an example of how unaccountable Israel's government is in regard to U.S., even as they pretend to have these kind of groups.
Part of the human rights vetting process for arms going to Israel, and a charity called Defense of Children International Palestine drew our attention at the State Department to the sexual assault, actually the rape, of a 13-year-old boy that occurred in an Israeli prison in the Moscovia in Jerusalem. We examined these allegations. We believe they were credible. We put them to the government of Israel. And you know what happened the next day? The IDF went into the DCIP offices and removed all their computers and declared them a terrorist entity.
Now, that's really important for other things we're going to talk about today. Arbitrarily declaring a group a terrorist because it doesn't work for your narratives. Remember that. I shouldn't need to point that out. It's obvious, like when the U.S. government arbitrarily deems groups terrorists, but then removes that label just because they want to work with Israel, showing you that it's an arbitrary term they use for coercive measures, and then openly work with the terrorists in the world while not calling them that. It's, or working with the ones they call terrorists, but then also working with the ones they don't and pretending they're not, like any number of groups we pointed out. But just remember that, because this group was not a terrorist entity. This was a group that was trying to call out what Israel's actions were, and they shut them down, called them terrorists because they don't want it to be called out.
I think it is vital that atrocities not happen to anyone, not sexual violations, not any kind of gross violation of human rights. We are looking at a situation where there is so much dehumanification, where people are not seen for the value that they have. And I think that's true whether you're talking about those who are attacked on their kibbutz or those who are attacked in their homes in Gaza or in the West Bank. What we really need is to center the human beings who are at the core and who are suffering so much in this conflict.
And this is the guy they don't want to work with, right? A guy actually saying that this is, you know, what we're talking about. A human-centric concept. Who cares what religion, what you're from? That we care about human life and respect the sanctity of life and the reality of your rights and don't impose things, don't displace people. Like, that's what he's talking about. Now, I'm not saying I know this person. For all I know, he's lying about everything. For all I know, he's a terrible person. But I completely agree with everything he just said. And that's what he was fighting for. That's what he was calling out. And they don't want that. That has to show you what these governments truly are. Now, here is another example. This is a newer clip. I believe this is posted on the 26th. I'm not sure when it was recorded, but I believe it's very new. And this is with, what's his name again? Mark Lamont Hill. Any level of due diligence would tell them that the arms they are making will be used to kill thousands of civilians. This is Josh Paul, again, on the record.
Are there other legal instruments that could be used against the United States if it continues to arm Israel?
So I know from colleagues inside the department that there are an increasing number of people who are declining to be a part of this because precisely they are afraid of being on holiday in Italy one day and having a knock on the door and saying the ICC would like to talk to you. Mm. That does have an impact. And what I would say to the colleagues who are not stepping back from this work is that they should be thinking about that as well, because there is some real liability here, both for government officials who are authorizing the transfer of weapons and for those in the defense industry. Who are, you know, building the arms that are being used. And I think, you know, any level of due diligence would tell them that the arms they are making will be used to kill thousands of civilians. There are also claims that are going to be made and that are being made in domestic courts around the country, but also internationally.
I think let's take what's evidence in the pattern over many, many decades, not just in the past 6 months or almost 7 months now, which is that there is both a deference to Israel and what Israel says without an adequate amount of scrutiny, and there is also a lack of even acknowledgement and respect for what Palestinians are saying. I think one of the things that's happening here when we talk about the dehumanization of Palestinians is the racialization that even makes their testimony less credible, so that folks who hear them, perhaps in the State Department, just aren't taking them as seriously unless somebody else is speaking for them. So I think that's first and foremost.
And here, interestingly enough, is what Netanyahu said today. Under my leadership, Israel will never accept any attempt by the ICC to undermine its inherent right to self-defense. So basically, you just the same thing. If UN, ICJ, ICC, it doesn't matter. If they come out and say what Israel likes, they go wholeheartedly agree. Go after Iran, go after Syria, go after them. In fact, they will attack these groups for not doing that. How dare you not call out the rape discussion that we're lying about? But when they come around the other way and go, well, what about you? You're not allowed to look at us. Well, this is the point we keep making that they've said many times. They have said directly from the Knesset many times, twice that I can prove. We are not bound by international law. We can act and legislate anywhere in the world. And that's coming largely from the extreme elements like we've talked about. That's crazy. And here is another example of them just simply going, we don't care what they have to say. As if any action against you committing a crime is somehow stopping your right to self-defense. All that means is that anything they do, any action they take is arbitrarily it's self-defense. Doesn't matter if we were attacked first. Doesn't matter anything. We're defending ourselves because we're always the victim. That's the point. And it says, and this is a Zionist manipulation. It says the threat to seize the soldiers and officials of the Middle East's only democracy, which it's just embarrassing they keep pushing that lie, and the world's only Jewish state is outrageous. Which, no, it's not true. There's plenty of countries with Jewish people in it. The idea that this is the only Jewish only state, if that's even what you're actually saying, which is what it is racist. That's what, if you can't pretend it's a state for only one ethnicity, one religion, nobody else in the world can say that without getting called racist. It's not special. The point is it's not, though, because the reality is this is a Zionist manipulation, and a lot of Jews in the world are now starting to call this out. And I'll play the Avi Shalom clip here because it's relevant.
Zionism is racism. Israel cannot be both. Israel is either a racist Jewish state or it's a democratic state for everybody. And that's what I would like Israel to be. I'd like a democratic solution, one state with equal rights for all its inhabitants. Your organization, Human Rights Watch, issued a report last year about Israel, mm-hmm. and the conclusion was it is an apartheid state. And there are four major human rights groups in the last 2 years mm-hmm. who issued similar reports, reached the same conclusion. Israel mm-hmm. is an apartheid state. So apartheid is racism. Apartheid is discrimination. But Israel is the only member of the United Nations that I know which is officially racist. And I say this because of the July 2018 nation state law, which says the Jews have a unique right to self-determination mm-hmm. in Israel. Unique means exclusive.
Yes.
It means Arabs have no right to self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
It means even if Arabs became a majority, mm-hmm. they would still have no right to self-determination.
Mm.
So most certainly Zionism is a racist ideology, mm-hmm. and it is largely responsible for the Nakba that has unfolded throughout the last century and continues today.
Avi Shalomi, respected Israeli professor, academic rather, he speaks from experience, right? And in case you don't remember, that's what he's discussing from 2019. This person spoke up trying to defend, or rather continuing to push the lie that Arabs are equal in this country. For all the people like the propagandists out there screaming that same, they're equal rights for everybody. How this is the kind of thing we're talking about. Knowing that it's self-evident that there's public information. The point was the TV star said Arabs are equal citizens. Netanyahu responded and publicly came out and said, no, you're wrong. Israel's the nation state of the Jews alone. It's just transparent. And in case you want to need it proven to you about apartheid, not that this should necessarily prove it, because anyone could be making this up, it could be a lie. The point is, at the very least, you should consider the reality of the apartheid state of Israel, simply because, one, I think it's obvious, self-evident, the history's there, but every major human rights group in the world has made sure this is known. They just lie about it. Human Rights Watch, apartheid state, Amnesty International, it's an apartheid state, and the most important one is B'Tselem, because it's a Jewish human rights group, or rather Israeli human rights group, and it is saying a regime of Jewish supremacy from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. This is apartheid. Now, going on with this statement, what he's saying is a threat to seize the soldiers and officers of the Middle East only democracy? What do you mean a threat? That's not what they're doing. They're saying we're going to investigate you for crimes. So if you're simply saying that's only a transparent effort to go after Jews, well, surprise, surprise. It's every single thing that happens. That's all that gets boiled down to, because that's the Zionist game. The reality is we can see crimes being committed by Israelis, by Israeli government members, whether or not they're Jewish is relevant. And the ICC is trying to investigate that it might be based on this growing concept. The ICJ is already looking into it. And all you can do is boil it down to the idea that we're just arbitrarily going after you because we hate who you are. It's the same old thing. You know what it reminds you of? They hate us because of our freedom. It's the same damn game that they've been playing on you forever. It says Israel will continue to wage to victory our just war, of course, against genocidal terrorists. So again, our just war against their genocide. It's, you know, I know you are, but what am I? But basically, and we will never defending ourselves, of course, because you're the victim, of course. While the ICC will not affect Israel's actions, it would set a dangerous precedent that threatens the soldiers and officials. Same game of all democracies fighting savage terrorism. No, it goes after your. I'm not support. I think the ICC and ICJ in general have always been manipulatable and are questionable, like any of the rest of the bodies that you have clearly tried to influence aggressively over the years. You're mad because you can't just get them to do what you want for whatever reason right now. So all you're simply saying is we won't allow them to do their job because we'll make it out to be that they're racists as usual. Well, here's what Muhammad Shihada point out. Are you worried about this, BB? Who would have thought that bombing, butchering, terrorizing, maiming, burning, torturing, starving, and besieging 2.4 million Gazans for 200 days and bragging about it constantly with unhinged genocidal speeches would have consequences? Here's an Israeli article. Will Netanyahu stand trial in The Hague? The clear message received in Israel. Because you have to realize they're losing support and control in Israel too. They just don't want you to see that. Now, also, let's not forget, it's not just the United States. As we said before, here's an article from Declassified UK. UK military support for Israel's genocide was pre-planned. This is an article from today, simply highlighting that, you know, you could take this in a couple of ways. It could be indicative of foreknowledge of the event of October 7th, which is very not something you should genuinely consider that. But it also could just mean that they were willing to support Israel no matter what happened. Who cares about the consequences? Now, here is I'm just going to read this for you. This is another video about minute 14. Israel is a parasitic entity that obtains its life essentials from outside in the form of U.S. aid and other forms of aid. Israeli occupational practices will only fall when American taxpayers stop funding them, says this Egyptian scholar. Or said in the past. This was 2003. It looks like he died in 2008. Egyptian scholar, author, and general coordinator of the opposition organization of Kifaya. He received an MA in English and comparative literature in Columbia University. The point is he's highlighting something that we all are becoming aware of. There's a reason that the U.S. government is dumping so much money and arms in Israel when they don't need that money. They need the support of the United States for sure. But the reality of this is, as he says, a parasitic entity. That's not about Jews or Israelis at large. It's about the government of Zion, the Zionist government, and what we're talking about today. Now, going into other manipulations here, this is the kind of thing that I keep seeing that is really important to highlight. We already see them bombing and murdering aid workers everywhere. I mean, it's been proven. Just take just the World Central Kitchen point made this something that you can't deny. It should have been that way before. But this is what happens when you have more people being killed, more aid workers being bombed, and suddenly their propagandists go to. Aviva Klompas comes out and says, this is outrageous. Members of a terror group in Gaza. Now it's becoming broad, right? Because you don't want to just focus on Hamas because, well, we need to keep going after that. So we want to include Palestinian Islamic Jihad and just, you know, whoever. Random terror group. So you mean all of Palestinians. That's what you're trying to do. Launched mortars at a humanitarian site as United Nations officials were touring the site. Oh, did they? Certainly possible. I wouldn't just blindly deny something like that. But where's the evidence, Aviva? I don't see any source material. In fact, you can search for this all day long and guess what you'll find? Nothing. If it had been Israel, she writes, there'd be endless news coverage. Why? Because Israel's keep murdering civilians. Maybe that's why. But she goes, AOC would have already cried about this. So now you're mad they don't freak out because you say things on Twitter with no source material? This is a lie, as far as I can tell. Now, I could have missed it somehow, but look for yourself. I can't find anything that backs this up. Now, maybe it'll come out tomorrow. Who knows? But here's the real point. We already know what's going on here. As the David writes, for context, Israel killed 200 humanitarian aid workers in less than 200 days. It's been backed up by IDF intelligence and the army, saying that the numbers that have been produced are accurate, reliable. More than the rest of the world in 30 years. They've killed more humanitarian aid workers than the rest of the world in 30 years. But apparently they've done more in stopping that than anybody else ever. I mean, it's comically stupid. Also, Israel bombed Red Cross ambulances, Doctors Without Borders camps, and tore down only cancer hospitals in Gaza, or the only cancer hospital. Remember, the game that Hamas is UNRWA and the UN somehow just didn't apply when they bombed the Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders, or numerous other examples that we talked about. You know why? Because nobody talked about it. Doctors Without Borders was screaming about it. Plenty of people have come out and said they just killed our aid worker, they killed our driver. Well, unless it's UNRWA that they can just blindly pretend Hamas was there, They just don't say anything because you can't just start saying everybody is Hamas because that looks even more stupid than you already do. The reality is they just hope you do what a lot of the Zionists did and just go, well, Hamas must have been there. They must have been working on it. Just assume into whatever they want you to think. The truth is this is unbelievably obvious. And let's also not forget that doctors, not Palestinian doctors, but doctors from London and around the world who were there have continued to tell you that they're lying about that.
Every single part of the hospital has been destroyed. The whole infrastructure of the hospital has been destroyed. When I spoke to Marwan yesterday, he told me there were 107 patients still in the hospital, 60 medical staff. God only knows what has happened to them. I think we've seen some of the pictures. Surgeons I know have been executed in the last 48 hours there. Bodies have been discovered in the last 12 to 24 hours who have been handcuffed with their arms behind their back. And so there is no doubt at all that multiple healthcare workers have been executed there in the last few days.
You believe executed by whom, Doctor?
By the Israeli Defence Force.
Why would they seek to execute surgeons and medical professionals?
Well, they've been doing it since October the 7th. Over 450 healthcare workers have been killed. Friends of mine that I've worked with over the years. Many have been abducted as well, and nothing has been heard of them since. So there is no doubt in my mind, and I can bear witness from this from my time at Al-Aqsa Hospital and from talking to people, that there's been direct targeting of the healthcare system in Gaza, direct targeting of hospitals, and multiple killings of healthcare workers.
Any death is tragic, but this is not, and I say again, anyone dying in any sense. So this is not, and please don't be upset by this expression, collateral damage. This is specifically targeted, you're saying, medical professionals by the IDF to be taken off and executed, is your belief?
Most certainly, that is my belief.
Have you at any time seen anything that would lead you to believe that there had been terrorists who were hiding in the hospital?
Without exception, every single one has responded to say they have never witnessed any Hamas militant in the hospitals they have worked in.
Now, what's important about that clip, guys, that was quite a while before the discussion today of these mass graves. The new discussion, because it's not a new thing. That's think about how important, that's Dr. Nick Maynard. And there's other doctors that have done the same. Outraged by even the question, because they keep telling you there's no evidence to this. And by the way, that's the case that we've also been highlighting. So he also discussed people being shot in front of him, hands being bound and buried. And, you know, that's exactly what they're now denying in the mass grave conversation. How much evidence can truly be ignored? Now, this is the point, though. Eva Klompas comes out and makes up a flimsy argument with text on Twitter with nothing to back it up. You know why? Because it's continuing. Here's the chairman of the Euromed Human Rights Group. Israeli warplanes targeted relief aid security teams in the western part of Gaza a short while ago, killing 8 of them on April 25th. Seems like a daily reality. Here is an article from the New Daily. Aid worker killed as Israel pounds northern Gaza. That was today. One after another, aid workers are dropping like flies, but nobody cares because it's become normal, I guess. We'll care about the World Central Kitchen, but then we can't just keep talking about it. It becomes benign. That's disgusting. Every one of these lives matters, whether they're Palestinian, Israeli, Jew, Muslim. It doesn't matter, guys. Human life matters. And the reality that we're watching aid workers get bombed and there's not even a brief conversation on corporate media makes me sick. They know what's going on and they don't care. Here she is, the same statement. But here's what Pearl Star points out. The obvious reality that you guys are stressing that nobody cares. Well, Israel has consistently refused access to UN officials to look at any of these things. So you can't pretend that they don't care while you're boxing them out when they want to look. You guys are manufacturing the illusion. Israeli airstrikes in southern Gaza, city of Rafah, kills 9 Palestinians, including 6 children. This was the 20th of April. All right, so if we're not talking about aid workers, we're still seeing bombing take place inside of Rafah, the place where we're told they're waiting for a plan. Well, what's the plan for the people that are being bombed right now that have nowhere to go? This is just the worst. This one thing is so disgusting to me because it's continued. This whole time, they keep pointing off like some distant thing that's about to happen in Rafah, which I think they're using as some kind of tool to use in negotiations, which that's why I'm kind of not hyping every time they speak up and go, we're going to do it next week or next tomorrow. When it does happen, which I think it will, I'm going to report on it. I'm tired of being played into that game as well. But my point is they're bombing there anyway. As Safa, I think it's, I'm forgetting his first name, Mohammed Safa, who just pointed this out. They're bombing just yesterday, the day before, killing people. In this case, 6 children, not Hamas members, children. There's another one, a different story. The next day, Israeli strikes on southern Gaza kill 22, mostly children. It's interesting how it seems to be mostly children. You know why? Because half the people there are children. Easy to understand, isn't it? Nobody cares. Now, yes, you see corporate media in some cases talking, pointing to this. You're not going to see it on the Fox and CNNs and MSNBC, not in the way that it should be. Not like, not in the reality that is we can prove. I mean, the fact that it's even posted like this is crazy to me. And then that nothing happens is even more crazy to me. Here's TRT World. They're not bombing them to death. Well, in this case, Israel kidnaps Palestinian infants from Gaza, takes them to an unknown place. Here is the Defense for Children International. Israeli forces refuse to disclose the number of Palestinian children detainees from Gaza. This is today. We just won't even tell you. So we're kidnapping children, and we won't even tell you we're taking them. But, you know, bad guys over there. Pay attention. Here's Torah Judaism. So if they're not kidnapping children and hiding them, they're beating up Jewish children in the streets. Anybody want to make sense of how this works? This is Israeli police. This is posted today. An Israeli Orthodox Jew, a child, is getting beat up by the IDF in the street of Israel. Where's Ben Shapiro protecting this Jew getting beat up? Oh, I guess he doesn't care about this Jewish person because he doesn't believe what he believes. So it's actually about Zionism, not Judaism. I mean, think about how disgusting this is, that this is a lie that's still being pushed while you can prove in every possible angle these people don't care about any of this. Torah Judaism writes, Zionism Israeli police, Zionist Israeli police beat a Jewish child. The state of Israel is the enemy of the Jews. Religious Jews are under pressure from Zionists. Jews are oppressed because of their religious beliefs. Israel is not a Jewish state. I'm, of course, one of the examples of these children that are being bombed, that nobody wants to talk about because, you know, Hamas or whatever. Here's what he had to say. And the point is, watch and listen carefully to this wounded intellectual boy. Now, I'm sorry, this is a little bit graphic. You can already see it. The child's face was melted off, most likely from white phosphorus or something else that they're using, and we know it. At the very least, from a bomb that hurt him. And that's a war crime. And no matter how you spin this, guys, what they're doing is wrong, and we all know it. Even the people lying about it know it, which is what makes me sick. Now, I'm gonna let this play out. If you want to see it, look into, watch the show. I don't want to read it all for the podcast. He's simply highlighting the reality of what's going on.
والله ربنا لا يعذبهم عذاب أليم حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل بس أين العالم؟ فيش عالم. العالم مغمض عينيه مطنشنا زي كأنه إحنا مش إنسان. الله يعزك. زي كأنه إحنا أصنام صنم قاعد بيعذب فيه قاعد بضرب فيه ضرب وهم سكتين بتطلعوا فينا بس لو انه يقفوا جبنا في صامتي انه وقفوا بس عنا الحصار انه وقفوا عنا الضرب وقفوا عنا الهوي الخبط.
The world has forgotten them. That what will these people say when they stand before God? It's just so hard to not see what's going on. And that's why this has so hard for me to realize how many people are actively looking at this kind of stuff. And then just, I mean, I don't even know what you, just ignoring it, promoting it. Here's an example of Israel killing the eldest daughter of Professor Rafet al-Arir, along with her husband and newborn baby, in a strike on an apartment building. One after another, whether Lavender or Hapsora and all the different AI programs, they're just murdering people right out in the front. I mean, and then posting videos of it on TikTok. And then Matt Merlo will stand up there and act like he's investigating it. Here is Cuts News Network showing you one more example of this guy is an Israeli lawyer who openly filmed himself destroying residential homes and raising trucks and properties for amusement. He's publicly talking about it, which he later posted on his Facebook account. Because that's how unaccountable this is. Boasting about the destruction he caused in Gaza. Laughing about it. Not because Hamas, because he was wanted to destroy because he hated Palestinians. Sergeant Sharon Ohana, an Israeli reservist who documented his daily crimes in Gaza on his Facebook account and Twitter, publicly posting pictures of torched Palestinian homes, writing genocidal statements with them. "We must not listen to Biden," he says. "We must flatten all of Gaza." Yeah, because it's totally about Hamas, right? It's totally about following international law, clearly. Well, let's talk about the mass graves. The obvious example of all the things we're highlighting here, because all these people that they're killing, at least in some cases, need to be covered up. Because there's, in some cases, people that are finding their way into these positions to highlight this stuff. Well, guess what? 700 bodies have now been discovered at the Nasir Hospital alone. 1,500 uncovered at Al-Shifa. Patients, some with catheters still attached. Children with hands still bound. We just played you Dr. Nick Maynard, who was there. He saw it. There's no way to deny this. Doctors and nurses wearing scrubs, many shot in the back of the head at point-blank range, execution style. There's Democracy Now! Discussed talking with Gaza-based journalist Akram al-Satari, who just returned from the Nasir Hospital. It's just speechless. And then, of course, we have the Euromed Human Rights Group highlighting 141 graves. They found 141 such mass graves that they've recorded that IDF have created. A new mass grave is now being opened in Rafah near the displaced tents for the victims killed by Israel, whose bodies were stolen and then returned to be buried collectively. And we can prove they've stolen organs, according to Euromed Human Rights Group. And here's what Israel had to say about this. So here's the worst part about Matt Miller and them acting like they're going to look to Israel to investigate, and the fact that they pretend that they want that. Here's what Israel said. This is posted today. Israel, quote, "Investigate what?" That pretty much sums it up, but I want to read more. Israel's military says the Biden administration's calls for an investigation into these reports of mass graves near major hospitals don't make sense because they already looked into it. Gee, who didn't see that coming? Over the past few days, U.S. officials, including National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, have called for Israel, completely disingenuously, to thoroughly and transparently, but them, you understand. So we're going to let you investigate yourself because that makes sense? No. Investigate reports of mass graves at Nasir Hospital in Khan Yunis, which Israeli forces last raided in February, they say. The State Department came under fire from reporters and advocates for refusing to call for an independent investigation, which they would do for any other circumstance, instead saying the U.S. will simply press Israel for information. And we saw Vital Patel completely stumble on this and make a fool of himself and make it obvious that they don't care. The bottom line is you have doctors like Nick Maynard and others who can testify to seeing it happen. There's no way you can deny this. When NatSec Daily asked Israel Defense Forces spokesman Nadav Shoshani whether Israel plans to investigate, he at first waved off the question, calling reports fake news. So here's how even in one conversation, here's how the Zionist game goes. Not real. Oh, but it is real. But we looked into it, and it's Hamas. And even pressed further, it becomes, well, maybe it was us, but here's why, because Hamas was human shields. It's constant. So in that report, he says, oh, fake news. And then asked if that means Israel won't investigate the mass grave reports, he says, investigate what? That was his actual response. He then added that Israel has already looked into the matter and found that there was no wrongdoing. Okay, wait, if it's fake news, how is there now something, but it's just no wrongdoing? It's ridiculous. He says, we gave answers. We don't bury people in mass graves. Not something we do. You mean other than the million examples we can prove from historical examples? These people are ridiculous, and they are banking on the fact that these governments are supporting their lies. It's embarrassingly obvious. Shoshani didn't provide details of the investigation, of course, or who Israel provided answers to specifically. They just shunned it off and said, oh, you're wrong, liar, you're racist, shut up. Earlier this week, it says the Israeli military said its troops had exhumed bodies, okay, in a respectful manner. Okay, so it's completely fake news, didn't happen. Oh, but it did, but no wrongdoing was done, but it was Hamas involved. Oh, but now it's, well, we did it, but it was just kind of different. It was respectful. Then Palestinians had previously buried, they said, they did it first, that they searched for other hostages, but then for some reason took the bodies away. But the ones not belonging to them were then returned. So why'd you take them away in the first place? Oh, but let's also leave out the fact that many of them were missing organs when they brought them back. Or the fact that they literally shoved bodies in these graves that we can prove based on 1,000 different examples. It says European Union and United Nations leaders have called for an independent investigation. So all of their allies are saying independent investigation. And they go, no, because we looked at it. And then everyone gets quiet. That's the current reality of what we're dealing with. It's disgusting. Now, we just talked about this. I was just making the point about arbitrary nautical restrictions, right? Where they just change the number, which, by the way, that in and of itself is a violation of international law, of human rights. There's a set reality that's supposed to be the standard. All they do is make up some narrative and say, this person shot this, or there's a stabbing and we have to hold back. All they do is arbitrarily change the amount of nautical miles they're allowed to go out to fish, and they never know what that is. And if they happen to go past the 1 mile, 2 mile, 5 mile mark, they don't know, they'll shoot at them. They'll kill them. Without question. That's been shown so many times. So that means they have to basically stay as far back as they can all the time and limit what they can gain from fishing in worry that they might get shot. And if they're starving, they have to press even further and risk getting killed to feed their families. That's the reality of Palestinian life. But on top of that, imagine trying to rationalize killing a starving population while they try to fish, which is what just happened. Fisherman Mohammed Al-Hisi, 39 years old, was shot dead by Israeli Navy off the coast of Rafah, 26th. So they're in the middle of a famine right now, manufactured by Israel. And you're telling us it's because Hamas. But here is an example of a Palestinian going out to fish and you shoot them because they're going out to fish. Were they going to stab you from their boat? What are we talking about here? It's obvious. It's everything else we've already told you. They're creating a famine. They are killing Palestinians. It's transparent. And also murdering farmers because, you know, we just don't want food for Palestinians. Abdallah Shamalak has been killed in Israel bombings of his farm. They're bombing farms because we've already proven this to you. Even the Washington Post broke down how they are systematically removing the food supply, the limited amount that was there, by bombing olive trees, removing olive trees, bombing farms, killing fishermen, killing the donkeys because they might eat them too. It's all happening. Now, overall, it's very clear that they're doing all of that. We all know it. The governments know it. They just don't care, and they're pushing forward for some unknown reason. Largely, it seems, because they actually believe in what's happening. And that is one of the primary reasons why they don't want this deal to ever go through, because they don't want to stop what's happening. And that means both Israel and the United States and the UK. Here is an article from Channel 12. Egypt sends delegation to Israel. Its latest effort to broker a ceasefire. This is from today. But what's ridiculous about this is it's the same damn thing. It says Friday talks focused at first on a limited exchange of hostages held by Hamas for Palestinian prisoners. Well, you already know the answer to this. And the return of a significant number of displaced Palestinians. So not everybody, which is stupid, seeing as how many times they've been offered a full exchange, which all of these Israelis protesting want. 972 magazine in Israel has made this clear. They're screaming for Netanyahu to take any deal they're offering for all the people. That's what they're screaming for. And I'll prove this to you. And the return of significant number of Palestinians. And it says in northern Gaza with minimum restrictions. But it says, as we keep telling you, Hamas has said it will not back down from its demands for a permanent ceasefire and full withdrawal of Israeli troops, both of which Israel has rejected. Now, you can disagree with that all you want. The point is that those are what they're at. They're saying, if you do those things, we will give all the hostage back. Israel keeps pretending that's what they want, and they don't do it. That's as simple as it gets. Now, you can agree, maybe even agree with that. Maybe you think the war on Hamas is more important than these families' lives. That's pretty disgusting. But overall, the point is the same, that they are pretending their game is to get them back and they're fighting for them back and that going after Hamas will achieve that. But it's obviously not the case because they're killing them as they do it. And it says Israel says it will continue military operations until Hamas is defeated and that will retain a security presence in Gaza afterwards, also known as permanent occupation of the area they're already occupying, but actual physical boots on the ground all throughout Gaza, which everything about this is illegal. And the overall point they're making here as it goes forward is simply, and they're highlighting exactly what we're saying for the most part, that this is the opposite of what anybody's asking for other than what Israel wants and the U.S. is trying to make happen. Here is Kenneth Roth highlighting the real, the kind of the central truth behind this whole thing, as we've been pointing out since the very first week. Hamas offers to lay down its arms and to recognize Israel within its pre-1967 borders. So kind of the opposite of what they all scream, only they want to murder all the Jews and they don't want there to be a state of Israel. Well, that's pretty damn obvious that's not the case. Now, again, I don't trust any of these elements because of the fact that we know at some level, even to this day, that there is funding coming from Israel. Nonetheless, interestingly enough, this person standing up and saying, well, we offered, and you can, and here's Associated Press. Hamas official says group would lay down its arms if an independent Palestinian state was established. Okay, so let's put this clear. They're saying, we'll give you every hostage back if you remove everybody from the area and ceasefire. And we'll lay down all of our arms if you give us what you've always said you wanted. Isn't that what they're calling for? The end of Hamas? Because if they lay down their arms, Israel can do whatever it wants. But they say no. And they have repeatedly said no. Netanyahu, not interested. He wants to keep pursuing the elusive goal of destroying Hamas and avoid the end war ending. We obviously know why, and rejects a two-state solution despite claiming they want that. Here's another example. BM points this out. This is a recording of one of these conversations with the families. We are willing to pause the fighting. This is the Hamas conversation for a hostage deal, but not, this is what Israel was saying, but not to end the war. Obviously, that's what we keep saying. They don't want to actually end it, even though that would get them what everybody in their country wants. So not a democracy, at the very least, or not any kind of representative government if you don't care what your people think, just like with the U.S. Former failed military commander Gal Hirsch, now an incompetent government official in charge of coordinating the issue of the abducted Israelis, he writes, basically tells the hostages' families that they're not going to see their loved ones. They're not going to see them again, since they won't return without an end to the war, meaning that the war will kill them, which we are all seeing, and even they're saying now. You keep killing us. We just played that other one for you. It says he further clarified later that even if we could get all the remaining hostages in exchange to a permanent ceasefire, the Israeli government still wouldn't agree to it. We've been telling you that from the first week. They keep lying about it. You can listen to the clip. It's just an audio clip of them telling you exactly what we just said. It's obvious. Here's Prem Thacker highlighting another article right here from Hebrew article from Israeli media. Title, if it goes, finally. There is no doubt that Netanyahu is preventing a deal to release the kidnappers. I think that's a translation. Ultimately, let me see if this one's any different. The point is, in general, we'll get to the abductee. I thought so. Yeah, that's a Google translation of error. Of course it is. There is no doubt that Netanyahu is preventing a deal to release the abductees. Because that's what they're saying. That's what this whole article is about. Read it for yourself. And as he writes, wow, former spokesperson for hostage families says Hamas offered to immediately release all the hostages if the IDF didn't invade Gaza. But the government rejected the proposal. Again, what we've been telling you from the first week, it's self-evident. It's been public. You should, if you cared to look. Says families weren't even notified about invasion and risks it could pose. Netanyahu has thwarted the hostage release time and time again. That's the truth. They don't care. They care more about their objectives, their war, and maybe you do too, than they do about their own people. That should drive you crazy. Now, on top of all of that, making sure those people continue to be hostages and potentially suffer, who knows what's happening over there? They're also continuing to block the aid, which means they're also starving their own people. How is that not obvious? Here's Quds News Network. This is today. Israeli settlers block the road for aid convoys from Jordan, destined for Gaza. They even assaulted the drivers, callously throwing desperately needed food aid into the road. Look at this. This is the reality, guys. As they keep pretending, oh, it's Hamas getting in the way. No, they're actively doing this, and we've proven it 15 times over. Here's an interesting article. Exclusive. U.S. aid officials say Israel breached U.S. directive on Gaza aid. It's the same conversation. Confidential U.S. paper predicts famine inevitable. So one, showing you that the U.S. very clearly knew what was going to happen. Just like Craig Murray said, they're involved. They wanted this. It seems pretty clear. But on top of that, the Memorandum 20 showing you they're already know they're violating their own laws by doing everything they're doing. It's all on the record. Now, getting into the conversation about the campus protests, and we'll end with this. It just has to be one of the most absurd things I've seen in all of this, because it's very, very obvious. You can't decouple this from the obvious public, and I mean outspoken and large Jewish organizations that are marching alongside these people. And yet you get these complete pro-Zionist, blinded to the truth maniacs out there that are screaming that every action they're taking is threatening every Jew in the world. I mean, maybe you even think that. But then at the very least, explain how that makes sense when they're marching alongside Jews, who then speak up and say, this has been the kindest protest I've ever been a part of. Nobody's threatened me. Again, you could maybe argue they're lying, but they're not even addressing that. In fact, there's a clip of one of these guys that has been caught up in all this, caught lying, in fact, getting confronted with that on an interview and then just fleeing from the interview because that's outrageously false. He says that there's any Jews involved is false, is lies. Guys, they're speaking up across the world. They're speaking up all across this country. I've shown you the clips, and I'll show you some of them again. Here's Rachel Blevins to start. Yesterday. Because a lot of this is in Texas as well. Greg Abbott, Governor Abbott is one of these wild Zionist pro. I mean, again, he's the one that passed the anti-BDS bill in Texas, which is fundamentally unconstitutional. He doesn't care. He's telling you, you can't protest for these things. Well, now we're seeing it happen again because this is the truth. They don't care about your constitutional rights. We do. The people do. It's time that we put people in place, whether it's this government or this type of government or this government, who care about those things. She writes, Texas Governor Abbott in 2019, showing you how hypocritical all these people are. I'm about to sign a law that protects free speech on college campuses in Texas. Yeah, he said that. I shouldn't have to do it. First Amendment guarantees it. Guys, people are ridiculous. Abbott in 2020 makes a trip to Israel, visits the infamous Wailing Wall, like all the rest of them. I mean, and even like, let's just say like the idea that they visit and act this way, like the reverence for it. I mean, it seems strange to me. I'm not saying it's wrong. You can have your religious beliefs. I'm simply arguing that I don't think every single member of Congress that they all end up doing this they're not all Jewish, are they? So why is this I mean, it just seems like a strange action to take. I think it's because it's about what they think they need to do to get the support of a political powerhouse. Zionism. I think that's what it is. But either way, maybe it's because he believes this. I don't know. But I think it's strange. Like, I find it hard to believe that in lockstep, you're finding every politician, save for very few, that would do the same thing. I just find that unlikely, at the very least. But he says, and then pledges in 2020 support for the strengthening of the bond between Texas and Israel. All the way in 2024. And don't forget, in between that, he passed an anti-BDS law. 2024. Claims pro-Palestinian protesters are, quote, hate-filled and anti-Semitic. Cheers on police abuse of peaceful students, professors, and journalists at the UT campus, Austin campus. So much for free speech being guaranteed on college campuses. Now, you can't just this is the game that's being played. If you think someone's breaking the law, then charge that person for a crime. You can't just broad stroke an entire group of people as racist, even though that's not a crime, and then claim that they don't have a right to protest, even though you just said years ago that there's no way around that right. It shows you that you guys have no meaning in anything you say. You're all fair weather politicians and opportunists. David Roth Lindberg points out, and this is an excellent point to think about as we're watching stuff like this, guys. Look at these police. You see, this is sort of like, it's not kettling exactly because they're not encircling them, at least right now. I mean, look at that, guys. Grabbed her by the hair, threw her to the ground. I mean, guys, this is crazy. You have to realize that. Now, let's just say one of them acted violent. Let's say one of them is a raging racist anti-Semite. The point is that they march in a wall and just push back peaceful protesters until they don't move and then argue that that becomes violence. That's them creating that. Same kind of thing as what kettling would do. It's in many ways, that very practice has been called almost unconstitutional, if not illegal. The point is that doing this creates what you want and also is provably a violation of their rights because all of these people are standing with their hands in the air. This is a crime. And he writes, the U.S. and the EU, in fact, the whole West, would condemn any non-Western country cracking down violently on freedom of speech and the right to demonstrate in this way. Even, I mean, they would even condemn it if the people were literally fighting back the whole time. And you've seen it, whether it's in Iran or Syria, it's because it's politically advantageous for them. Now, you're watching them prove to you they don't care about any of it. They would also demonize the country and its leadership, as you well know. But this is okay because the U.S. is West imperialist, 100%. This is Ohio State. Here is a professor. Watch the way they handle that. I'm not saying professors should get special treatment. Not in any way, shape, or form. But what bothers me is that you have people on the right of this conversation, some of them, who have this, you know, like what's funny is they talk about the woke mind virus, which I agree. In general, the woke concept is dangerous. We need to make up a word for whatever the extreme opposite of that is of the Republicans. There's always the same thing. Trump derangement syndrome went both ways, right? So does this. They're the whatever the mind virus is in reverse that makes them blindly ignore their own, shall not be infringed rights concepts, which we should all believe in, like this. I would argue there's people, and you can look in the chat for yourself, where they're going, you know, yeah, serves a right for spreading their ideology or whatever. That's so grossly stupid. I can disagree with people and I can say I think they're just stupid or that they're what they're saying is dangerous, but it doesn't remove their rights. It doesn't remove their right to peacefully protest, whatever you think about what they're doing. My point is that we can see that happening in the two-party illusion on both sides. Or suddenly, because you choose to, you just get rid of the thing because we don't, her right to this is not there because she said the wrong thing. It's the same difference. And she says, I'm a professor. And this person says, it's not a matter of suppressing anti-genocidal protesters, guys. And I think we know that. It's a brutal war to protect Zionism, even if the victims are very American students and professors. So whatever you think about whatever her thoughts may be on climate change or COVID-19 or whatever else, the fact that they're doing this to a professor simply because they're protesting for Palestine, not being violent, the insinuation being that because they're there, they're wink-wink racist, which means they're wink-wink threatening, which means we're a Jew and we're scared, which means we have to violently take them down because they're violent. That's the logic happening here, or the lack thereof. It's a crime. And if you care about constitutional rights at all, you should be standing up for her, even if you disagree with her. I mean, right now, what justifies that kind of action for somebody who's not being violent? Look at her arm. That, I guarantee that hurt. Oh my God. Guys, that's crazy.
You are fascist. You are Hitler. You are laughing dog. Stand by you. May you never live another day.
Guys, she's saying I'm a professor. We've seen them arrest Fox News, beat them up, throw them on the ground. I mean, it's everywhere. And again, take a gander at some of the comments. It'll drive you crazy because there's plenty. And again, it could be liars. It could be people pretending to be right-leaning people. It could be Zionists pretending to be anybody. But my point is, you know, there's a level of the conversation where people are ignoring things that we should care about because of a wedge issue, because of two-party illusion nonsense. Here's another example. And it's a non-violent one, but it's a kind of petty action we're seeing. So a non-violent protest of people standing, not pushing, not screaming, not, and again, every one of these we're showing you, by the way, you can prove are, if not half, a large grouping of the people involved are Jewish. You have to include that. Furkan writes, it is all USA sold to Zionists so shameless. He says, ASU has now turned on the sprinklers to deter pro-Palestinian protesters. You know, it used to be at least the narrative that in college was where you were allowed to have these kind of conversations. You were allowed to protest and stand up for things that were contentious and have these dangers. That's where you were supposed to, no, not today. You're not allowed to do things if the empire disagrees and your supposed college leadership doesn't care about that. Protesters are putting bags over their items to stop the sprinklers from spraying. Here, really graceful highlights. And guys, if you haven't seen this, this is actually pretty shocking to me. I got to be honest. Like, I didn't think this is two different examples in Ohio of whoever's doing this, putting snipers on the roofs. Look at that. How do you justify that? I mean, even the argument that they're being violent or something, that they're threatening Jewish people, you know, snipers? I mean, what is this, a military engagement? Guys, this is so alarmingly over the top. I guarantee you this came down from something other than average people acting on behalf of rights. And as she writes, they're so heavy-handed with this PSYOP. It's crazy. Even with the history of something like Kent State University and the reality of the National Guard shooting unarmed protesters, and yet here we are again. It's just so staggering. Here's another example of the lies we're talking about. This person who is a UPenn student combating anti-Semitism, of course, featured on Fox News and Washington Post and Bloomberg. Here's what he says. At Penn University Now, an individual makes the upside-down triangle. And he says, at Jewish students, which, I mean, my God, like, is this directed at you? How do we know what's behind you? The bottom line is that what that mean? What is that supposed to mean? He says, if you don't know, it's become a Hamas logo for targets. I mean, these people are ridiculous. Quite frankly, who knows? For what I think it's pretty clear. Have you looked at the Palestinian flag? I'm pretty sure that's the Palestinian flag symbol, the triangle on the front side. But who knows? Either way, for you to just to blindly argue what he's doing is, I guess, what, pointing at you for Hamas to target you? He says, is this still a peaceful protest? Not harassing or intimidating? I mean, this guy is ridiculous. All of the people I see pushing this narrative are shockingly childish. And what they're doing is lying to you. Like that very famous person that literally got caught because he didn't know the other guy was filming, I think, the Uber driver, who came out to say, okay, man, you tried to get a car for five people that only fits four. And so he brings out his phone and he goes, you're threatening my children. It was on video. You all saw it. It's painful. Why would you do that? Only a few reasons to push the narrative that Jews are at threat when you know you're lying about that, to use it for personal interest, or just to promote Zionism in any way you can. It's disgusting. And Dutchie says, tired of the spin. Here's another angle of it too, by the way. It's known that Israelis are infiltrating for photo ops. It is known. It's provable. And if you didn't see the coverage, Jason just put out a great clip of what we did yesterday. Astroturfing, or they call it astrosurfing, the deceptive practice of presenting an orchestrated marketing or public relations campaign in the guise of unsolicited comments from members of the public. And in this case, you watch the video. We played this. This is a video of the people in this group openly saying that they have been paid by the state of Israel, or rather Israeli, pro-Israel groups, $50,000 to go out and fake protest and incite violence. And there's multiple groups. You can see the documentation. We go through it in the article. We go through it in the show. And on top of that, there are countless examples of this. So I'm not saying we know that's what this guy is, but you at least have to consider when you see things that they're pointing out that maybe that was manufactured. But either way, you're seeing stupid things like this, or they're pointing at someone holding a Free Palestine sign and going, I'm scared. They're threatening me. It's painful, which then has to show you that if they have to make things up like this, it's probably at the very least not what they're saying. Here's an example of this. Now, there's people in here screaming, using bad words. But you tell me what this... Let's listen to it first, and you tell me if what he writes is actually even remotely what you see in this video.
We don't want no Zionists
here! We don't want no
Zionists here! Say it loud, say it clear! We don't want no Zionists here!
Saying Zionists. We don't want no Zionists here. Very simple.
We don't want no Zionists here.
Sir, you're touching me.
And realize there's Jews all in this protest, provably. And the first thing he says, you're touching me. You know, as he walks into the middle of this protest, trying to cause a problem.
About the situation.
Yes.
What we
no
know
losses.
Is that the chains
I can. This is a public campus. I'm a CUNY student.
Yes, he is allowed to be there. No one's questioning that. Point is, though, that he is the one instigating, and it's very clear.
Yes, right. But we do Buddy, know
I'm
that
a CUNY student. You're not going to move me.
We will not sweep again tonight.
Out.
Like, if you here's the best way to put it. If you're fearful and you think these people are threatening you, does it make sense to walk up next to them and stand alongside them and go, "Don't touch me"? Like, he's allowed to do that, sure. Like a child is allowed to go, "I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you." Same thing. So the bottom line is, does that mean he's fearful? Does that mean he's being threatened? Or if he were just to have walked by, nothing happened to him, there's not a story in that. Ah, it did it again. This is so strange. Hold on. This happened yesterday, too. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think it's this one. Oh, and now it won't upload. Saying, your browser is having trouble sharing your video. What? Let me try this. Same thing I did last time. I don't even know how this happens. It's so strange. Here we go. But because I did it on the side, we're going to have to watch it from the beginning again. But I'll let it play through. Give it a second. So the point is, as it goes through, he ultimately ends up, it's hard to see whether his hat gets knocked off. He doesn't call it a yarmulke. I think they say kifa. I'm not educated on the differences of these things. So the point is, he's wearing something, and I think it's a traditional Jewish garb of some kind, and it gets knocked off. And he claims they threaten him to don't you pick that up, we're going to beat you up. And you can hear clearly in the clip, that's not what they say. So why would you have to lie about it? Like, you think we're not going to watch the video?
Sir, you're touching me.
Get out right now.
What are you looking at? Pick your hat up and get the fuck out of here. Pick it up.
Pick it up.
Whoa. Right. Okay. So it's very clear. Yeah, the guy got hostile with him, but you have to realize at least what it appears to be, and it seems like what everybody around is backed up, but of course they could be lying, is that he was in there pressing up against them in their space, which you can hear the other guy say, come on, you're in my space. That was the other guy. And then it's hard to see what happens, but his hat is on the ground and the guy says, pick up your hat and get out of here. Like, so they're the ones, you could argue, feeling threatened by this guy pressing into them. And they very clearly know at this point how these things have been orchestrated and used. And so they're saying, get out. But again, let's look back at what he said. He says, watch. A visibly Orthodox Jew, which plenty of people down below who were there, people are commenting going, what do you mean visibly Orthodox Jew? Look at his picture. I don't see anything that suggests Orthodox Jew. He goes, gets assaulted, which didn't happen, while filming Hamas encampment, which is not what it is. My kippah, is what he called it, falls off. So even he says it just falls off. And the mob says, quote, pick up your effing hat, I'll F you up. I almost said the F word. That's not what you literally just heard what they said. Like, it's so shocking to me that even while they're lying about an entire event, they have to make up an entire story that's not even, you can listen to it, and the guy says, pick up your hat and get out of here. I mean, it's just so sad. Like, so if they have to make up that much of a lie around a story, that's clear there's not what's going on. And on top of that, there are Jewish students there with them protesting for free Palestine. This, to me, guys, looks like a small account that is trying to get attention. That's what I think this is. It says president of what he at least writes on his bio, president of Jewish Students for America, featured on Fox News. So he's a liar. That's what I think. Not because he's Jewish, not because he's Israeli, but because he's a liar, because he's trying to instigate something and manufacture an illusion for Zionism. Because guess what, guys? Jewish Voices for Peace, Jewish Voice for Peace, and plenty of others are huge Jewish organizations that are anti-Zionist that have been taking part in this protest since October 7th and long before it, fighting for a free Palestine. Now, here's an example. Gideon Falter was the guy we were recently talking about. The video we showed you is him standing there as the police are talking to him, right? And he's the one trying to say, they're threatening me. I'm just trying to walk through. I'm just a bypasser. I have nothing to do with this. Well, you clearly made a point to go through the protest for a reason. My point is, the police came up and said, look, man, the cop was saying, he was saying you were bumping into people, that you were purposefully bumping into people. And the guy's like, I don't even know who he is. And he's like, that's a police officer. Oops. And that was the part of the video that, of course, they cut out. Shocking, I know. So the reality is he was there instigating. They caught that video on video where the police was saying, we watched you walk into people on purpose. Okay. Then it's obvious that we can see that at that protest, there was a huge portion. This is specifically the one that I think is provably at least half of the entire thing were major Jewish organizations. Here is an individual speaking on the interview. It's Ben Jamal, director of Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, speaking with Sky News, who makes that point. Now, you can dispute the amount. You can dispute that there's, however many. The point is you cannot dispute that there were Jewish organizations there. Why? Because they spoke up. They've been speaking around publicly about the fact that they're involved with this, about the fact that they're fighting for Palestine, about the fact that they've recognized what Zionism is. I mean, outspoken, major people. And yet this is what he has to say about this. Because you have to, if you're lying, what are you going to do? If your whole narrative is, I feel threatened as a Jew because they hate Jewish people, and they say there's a lot of Jewish people there, your only action is to pretend it's not true.
From the start of these marches, very early on, his organization called for the army to be brought onto the streets. The issue is, the problem with Mr. Falter's presence was not that he is openly Jewish. He's not dealing with the fact that at every single march, there are thousands of Jewish people marching, many of them in an organized
block. What rubbish.
They're in an organized block, in a Jewish block. They are warmly welcomed at every demonstration. Some of them have put out public statements disassociating themselves with what Mr. Falter and his organization were doing at the last march. So that's
let him come back to you on that.
First of all, I don't want to continue having a conversation with Ben Jamal. I'm happy to have an interview with you, but I don't want to carry on.
You did want to come on and talk.
I'm not criticizing UK.
I wanted to have the conversation.
Yeah, busted. Right? You're the one that said you wanted to have this conversation with him, and now he brings up a fact that makes you uncomfortable, and you go, I'm just not even going to talk with this guy anymore because he's a liar. No, he's not, and it's provably obvious. He's embarrassed, I think. He's caught and embarrassed. He's already been caught. He's already been caught on TV or on video being told he's the one causing the problem. He's on this video, on this interview, I argue, trying to cover that up, and this just explodes the narrative. That's my opinion, but I think it's obviously self-evident right now that that's what's going on. You can see these groups. Now, I'm going to play, let me grab these videos just very quickly, some of the ones that we've talked about before.
This is the first time I am using my full real name to stand in solidarity with Palestinians. And I don't deserve applause because I am too late. Because every single day that we don't speak out as Jews in support of Palestinian liberation is another day too late.
Come have some matzo ball soup. We're having a great time. We got plenty to go for everyone. And we'll be out here having a really lovely holiday.
Columbia University has been at the center of pro-Palestinian protests for more than a week. Safety concerns have been raised by Jewish students on campus, but as Passover week begins, a group of Jewish and non-Jewish protesters have gathered at the university to celebrate.
There is nowhere else I should be for Passover besides here on campus.
Passover is the story of our escape from slavery in the land of Egypt. And I think we need to recognize that on Passover, it's important to stand up for oppressed people everywhere, whether they're Jewish or not.
A Holocaust survivor, my message to the brave student protesters in America is just keep doing it, don't give up. We are doing exactly the same, and in the long term, we are going to prevail.
I am a Holocaust survivor. I do not deserve applause. I am here because I experienced as a child every single thing that a child is experiencing on a daily basis, including the loss of my family, including war, firebombing, and you name it. It pleases me to no end to see that you are here. I take courage and inspiration from you to keep going. I'm 88 years old. I am a civil rights activist. When I came to America as an almost 17-year-old in New York City, I discovered America. I discovered the racism, and I became an activist against war, justice, and I'm here as a peace activist.
Thousands of Jewish people marching, many of them in an organized...
Not what rubbish.
What a liar, right? I mean, it's stupidly obvious. Now, I will point out something that, just a small point that Danny Rancourt pointed out, which, I mean, I agree with the sentiment, right? I mean, what he was trying to say is that he's frustrated. He's tired of seeing that people only focus on the Holocaust survivors. Like, the point is, no matter what you are, where you're from, what your history is, there's no reason... Everybody should be acknowledging that this is a genocide, that these are crimes being committed. That's the point, is that we should, it shouldn't be hyper-focused on one type of person. Doesn't matter what you are, where you come from, what your intelligence level is. It's impossible not to understand what's happening. And that's why these people are lying to your face. They're terrified. Not of attackers from Palestinian protests, of people realizing what they truly are. Here's AIPAC, by the way. Now that we've made it, you know, for those that might not have seen, definitively shown you that there's very clear Jewish presence at these protests, here's AIPAC. Peaceful protest, in quotes, at Cornell, one of the places we just showed you, calling for the annihilation of the Jewish state. Guys, this is one of the locations that is provably chock full of Jewish organizations. Now, here's what they're actually saying before I read what I said.
We don't want a Jewish state.
Now, what I believe they're saying, first of all, is we don't want no Jewish state. Now, what's important about that, and the reason I actually think that's even the chant that's being said, is because there's Jewish people there saying that. I argue that most Palestinian protesters would say Zionism or whatever else, because they know what they'll be framed as. And I honestly believe that most of them think that Zionism is the central problem. But they are the ones, as the Israeli government, saying it's the Jewish state. So there's nothing racist about saying that. They're simply saying, we don't want what you're highlighting is what you're doing. My point is, you usually hear that statement from Jews standing up against Zionism. And there's a lot of Jewish people protesting there. Now, my overall point is, they're saying we don't want no Jewish state, as that's what Israel's framing it as. We want 48. Now, I believe what they mean is like 1948, like the prior. And that would mean that we don't want two-state solution. We want Palestine. Now, you can argue that means whatever you want it to mean. It doesn't have to mean the annihilation of anything. It just has to mean the legal reality. But plenty, I think most people, including even Palestinian protesters, are fighting for a two-state solution, as you've clearly seen. All of that's to say, you can't pretend that this is racist when you're literally talking about Jewish people saying, that doesn't support me. I don't identify with the state of Israel. But that's what AIPAC did. You know, the group that pretends to stand up for Jews. But when it really does, is stand up for Israel in the Zionist state. As I said, so AIPAC is in the business of attacking Jews who don't support the state of Israel? Because that's half of who's out there chanting, sort of destroys your penned image, doesn't it? You fight in the interest of, obfuscate for, and incessantly lie to hide the crimes of Zionism. That's what AIPAC does. And here's what Ian Carroll said in response to the same comment. He says, oh no, look, Americans exercising their First Amendment rights. Exactly. Doesn't matter whether you think it's offensive. They have a right to say these things. And what do? They use violence to shut them down because that's what authoritarians do. He says, quick, bribe more politicians with foreign money to make them stop. Outstanding. Now, here's another example of how ridiculous this is. Here's Greenblatt using the same kind of conversation. Like here, what they say is, basically what he's doing is arguing these are agents of Iran. Or insinuating that they're somehow working for Iran. And what's hilarious to me is that they don't think they even care the contradictory, that the hypocrisy, as Yossi points out. He says, wait a minute. Many and the SJP is the group, I'm forgetting the name. It's one of the Palestinian groups that are fighting for free Palestine. He's saying many of these people are Jewish, which they are, easy to prove, just like Jewish Voice for Peace. Right? It's obvious, and they're fighting for free Palestine. So is he accusing all of these Jewish students of having dual loyalty to a foreign country? He is. take a minute and absorb the hypocrisy there, the ridiculousness of shouting that that's an anti-Semitism or that's racist to say about Jews in Israel. Well, you're literally going, but those Jews are for working for Iran secretly. It's just, you can't even make this stuff up. It's so stupid. And they write, folks, Jonathan Greenblatt is an anti-Semite who is inciting violence against Jewish students. He's trying to use the same narratives that they use. Here's what he's saying.
It's funny, we're talking about Iran a few minutes ago. Iran has their military proxies.
And let's not forget, we're at the game. They're now trying to shift you over to Iran because they're going to keep this going.
Iran a few minutes ago. Iran has their military proxies, like Hezbollah, and Iran has their campus proxies, like these groups like SJP and JVP.
Oh, so they all work for Iran. There's no evidence? Yeah, shocking. And we can prove to you all the claims that these people are proxies, Hezbollah. That's not true, guys. It's even the U.S. and many times over the years have admitted that's not true. They're connected, sure, like any other allies are, but they are not proxies. They're not facilitating this. They're supporting resistance. And to say that these groups fighting for free Palestine are Iran proxies, it's ignorant. And yet, at the same time, you could argue it's racist and anti-Semitic, right? They're Jewish, and he's claiming they have a secret dual loyalty to another country. I mean, you just can't. It's laughably absurd.
I mean, look at them. I mean, this is literally like a demonstration in Tehran.
It's a protest, guys. It's a protest. It looks like a protest anywhere a protest is happening. These people are irrational and desperate to make you think what's happening is dangerous. The truth is, it is dangerous. It's dangerous to Zionism. Here's what Ben Shapiro said. After everything we just showed you, he says free speech must be protected on public college campuses. Of course he starts with that. Just like we're going to show you in all these statements, he doesn't really even use the word but clearly that's the point. And the argument is classically is anything before the word but is false or not genuine. You don't start with that statement and then justify why that's not happening. He says also, violation of the law is a violation of the law. Yeah, nobody's going to disagree with any of that. But to pretend that by statements they're making or beliefs they have that therefore they're violent, which therefore that's somehow a threat, which means therefore they're violating a law, which means everybody that immediately is part of that, so remove them all, is absurd. Nobody is going to stand by that argument all the way through. With a court of law, you are broad stroking an entire protest, removing their First Amendment rights because you said some of them may be this way, or broad stroking all of them as the same because of an example you see. It's absurd. And I guarantee you he knows that. He goes on to say these are illegal protests, interesting choice of words, that are designed to intimidate, obstruct, and harass Jewish students. You mean other than the Jewish students that are partaking in them, right, Ben? In violation of Title V of the Civil Rights Act. They're designed to intimidate Jewish students. I mean, this is just absurd. As everyone knows, he says, if these protests were harassing Black students and calling, leaning into the two-party woke dynamic politics, trying to bring over the more Republicans to make go, yeah, it's only because they're... It's obvious what's going on here. You are lying through your teeth. And I've even posted beneath him. I mean, exactly. Adam's doing the same thing. Placing snipers on American students is now based in red pill. You're making fun of them. No one is calling for the extermination of Jews, you liar. Facts don't care about your feelings. Yeah, put it back in his face. He goes on to make the statements down here, claiming that's what they're doing. I mean, guys, this person is a joke. Look, if you can seriously see Holocaust survivors standing out there going, we support this, how are you pretending it's designed to intimidate Jewish people? You need to make fun of somebody like this. This person needs to be laughed at for how stupid this is because he's lying. And you know he knows he's lying. So why do you think that is? Here's the NYPD deputy commissioner. And this is the point about the butt more specifically because you can see it. He goes, everyone has a constitutional right to protest. It's one of the pillars of our great democracy. But, and that's where you go, okay, so he didn't mean that. Kids also have a right to go to school without being harassed. Well, what's funny about that is I don't think there's laws in place that say you can't harass and threaten. There's not some constitutional right that says you can't get bullied on the way to school. Now, no one should support that. Have laws in place to stop that. But you have to realize that there's not some equal dynamic happening here. To go, well, they have a right. It's sort of like saying they have a right to an abortion. They're playing fast and loose with what the reality of your rights actually are. I would argue clearly, even that may challenge beliefs I have in religious sense, that people have a right to their own body's choices. But nonetheless, you can still argue that that's not a constitutional right. It's not. But here we're talking about the reality that, or what he's saying is that here we have a constitutional right that I just said is paramount, a pillar of our society. But kids have a right to go to school without being harassed. Okay, well, first of all, even if you pretend that's a clear dynamic there where school not being harassed is a constitutional right that somehow challenges your right to protest, can you show me the example of where they were being harassed and not make it some flimsy, arbitrary, half-thought, you know, where they set free Palestine that made him scared and therefore they're all threatening, therefore shut the whole thing down? No, they can't, because it's not happening as far as I can tell. And every example I've seen, which doesn't mean it's not there, I guarantee there's somebody. That's my point in the beginning. But the ones I'm seeing, we later find out are in fact lies. I've shown you the evidence of that. People that are provably shown to not even be part of it, they get caught later being, it's obvious what they're doing. But he says, there is nothing horrific about protecting the safety of young students who are trying to go back to school. Nobody, when you're walking through these protests, no one's blocking students from going to school. You're claiming they're scared and claiming that they're at threat when there's no reasonable threat, and which then in some cases makes them really feel scared. It's the Zionism manipulation. You're creating the reason to justify their presence. He says, we've said it time and again, the NYPD will always protect and defend your right to protest, but it's so stupid. Just because you hold a sign while you're threatening, harassing, intimidating doesn't give you a free pass for criminal conduct. Okay, if somebody's breaking the law, arrest them. If they're harassing somebody, charge them with harassment. The idea that you can then shut down an entire protest of people because you claim somebody's harassing or insinuating that every single one of them are all harassing when you can prove that's not the case makes you a joke, makes you a liar. It says being anti-Semitic and spewing hate to kids will never be tolerated. Well, first of all, it's actually a right. You are, in fact, allowed to say what you want. But you see, they don't care about your rights as much as they keep going, we care about them, but in fact, you do have a right to spew hate. You do. That's a it's free. It's the simple reality. I don't support it. I think you're gross if you're doing it, but you have a constitutional right to free speech. But they won't tolerate your free speech because you have a right to not be bullied on the way to school, which isn't even happening. That's how stupid all this is. Overall, you can see what's happening. Here's, I did actually grab so many of these. You've already seen this. I can show you almost every single member of Congress making the almost identical statements in other contexts, saying, I stand with Israel no matter what, stuff like that. Here's Congresswoman Kathy Manning on, this is yesterday. I'm deeply disturbed that protesters at my alma mater, Harvard, one of the ones we've talked about and shown you images of, where there's lots of Jewish people standing alongside them protesting for peace, she says, are calling for an intifada revolution. Well, it just shows you how ignorant these people are. It's the same word. That's what it means. It's intifada is another word. It's a synonym for revolution. As we, I think I might have even posted it, not on this one, I guess. Let me see if I have the image. I can grab it and show you. No, I don't think I have it. Well, the point was, intifada means revolution. It means really ultimately directly translates in some cases to shake off or remove. And the idea is remove the yoke of occupation. Now, yes, anybody could use the word intifada and mean violence, just like you can say, let's have a revolution and your government calls it insurrection. It's weird how we can have an American revolution that we praise ourselves on, and yet that some people can stand up, and even though it's in the Constitution and enshrined in such, that you can say you want a revolution against an unjust government, and they go, revolution, insurrection, crime. Well, maybe it is. But your point here is that people having signs saying intifada are aligned, there's solidarity with intifada in Palestine against occupying powers, which is a legal right. And in this case, it means resistance. But here they are, by the way, again, stupidly saying intifada revolution. But she says the intifada in Israel consisted of terrorist bombings that killed innocent civilians. Now, in the process of all of this, as nobody should deny, there has been people attacking civilians on both sides, undeniably, gigantically more against the Palestinians. And that's an undeniable fact. But yes, there were still Palestinians that were taking out attacks against civilians in Israel too. But then you also have to include the fact that it's an illegal occupation and that they are the ones putting people illegally in front of them as a human shield, but it still doesn't justify the attacks on civilians, neither from Hamas or anybody else. But it doesn't change the fact that pretending that the Intifada means that one tiny part of a much larger atrocity committed against Palestinians is either willful ignorance or actual ignorance. She says calls for an Intifada revolution, which nobody's saying because that's dumb, are calls for violence against Jews and are unacceptable. That's not what it means. These are people with power who either don't care about the truth because that's what most of them are, or she's that stupid. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And in doing so, she's making people at risk. She's putting people in danger. Many of them, Jewish students, standing up for Palestine. And then one last point on this, I think is just absurd, which is exactly what I expected. This is yesterday. USC, and by the way, other colleges too, have suddenly canceled their graduation ceremony. Why? Because of the Palestinian protests. How do you think that makes sense? I can tell you what this has done. This is clear. This is collective punishment. Isn't that perfect? Not a surprise. Zionists influencing what's happening. Clearly, collective punishment seems like a go-to, right? We're going to punish the whole school. We're going to try to create a dynamic that makes them hate these protesters because they ruined their graduation. Well, no, that's not what happened. The school decided to shut down the graduation for an political interest when there was no reason to do so. I mean, that's ridiculous. So you're trying to push people to hate these protesters because you can't get them to hate them now because everyone sees right through what you're doing. It's just crazy to me. Now, I'm actually going to end right there. I was going to get into a deeper point here. It's going to take me a long time to go through it all. And ultimately, I wanted to end before it got too late today. But I'm going to talk about this. It specifically has to do with a Laura Loomer investigation and somebody they're framing as some kind of a terrorist at one of these marches. And the reality is, I can prove to you that it's not true. This guy. It's just embarrassing that these people call themselves journalists. And the truth is, you can dive through the information. For crying out loud, let's just do it. I do this every time. How much time we got left? Okay. Unfortunately, because I think the problem is that I've realized, just remembered just now, that I'm going to be doing something all day tomorrow. And if I don't talk about it now, it probably won't get time. This is important to talk about. So I'm going to do this quick, even though it should have more time. This is a post from Laura Loomer. You know, don't forget the one that has tried to take credit for the investigation into the Azov movement when she just gleaned all the information from a lot of other people and then, you know, casually left out one of the central parts, which is that Israel arms them and is involved in the whole thing. Shocking, I know. And then doesn't talk about how there's an overlap with everything going on today because there's clear Zionist influence here. And she's a proud Zionist. And in fact, will openly tell you that Islam is the danger. We're all when ignoring the fact that Israel completely has armed and funded a lot of the groups that have justified everything, including Hamas, because that's what intelligent people do, right? Hide from all the facts if it challenges your narrative. But here's the point. This is somebody working for Laura Loomer who abrasively goes up to this guy. Basically says that, where was it? I'll just read this one. So it goes, today, Loomer Unleashed correspondent went inside the Northwestern U pro-Hamas encampment, which, again, that is not a journalist. That's dumb because they're telling you publicly that's not what they're doing. It's clear that they're not fighting for Hamas. They're fighting for Palestinian self-determination. I'm sure some of them do, but just to broad stroke them all and call that is a narrative. That's propaganda, which means you're not a journalist. Neither are all the corporate media liars doing the same thing. But they says, and this is in Chicago, and found the leader, I don't know how you could argue this would be the leader of the entire protest, but that's what the insinuation. The guy is, in fact, a leader of a Palestinian support group and has worked a lot in regard to fighting for immigrants and the way they've been abused. Now, I am not endorsing this person. I don't know everything he's ever done. I'm simply highlighting that what they're saying is false. And I'll show you. It doesn't change the fact that they're already trying to use this through all of these right-wing circles that blindly trust people like Laura Loomer, which that's ridiculous, that this is how you can prove that every one of these college campus protests are all Hamas. And that's why it's ridiculous. Let me show you. His name is Hatem Abu Daya. I'm probably mispronouncing it, but he says, I previously reported, she says, on this person in October and discovered that he was under investigation by the FBI, which right there shows you how flimsy and lacking of due diligence these people are. Because what she's pointing to is something that happened a long time ago. As far as I can tell, and I looked thoroughly today and I spoke to Robert about this, he's not currently being investigated by the FBI, at least as we can tell. Now, I guarantee all of these people, including myself, are probably in some level being watched about stuff like this. But the point is, she stupidly claims that he has links to Hamas and the PLFP. The Palestinian, what was it exactly? I want to make sure I say it correctly. It's right here. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Now, again, I'm not supporting or advocating for anything here, even though in some cases I probably would. The point is, that's not where we're going with this. What we're talking about simply is provable information. And the point that she conflates these two is one thing I want you to remember, because that's ridiculous. And Robert, I'll read to you what he says. Now talk to him about this. These things are contradictory, understand. And for them to say that is just flimsy and clumsy, because what he does have association with is this group, the Palestinian Front. And I'll show you why, and you can have your own opinions about whether it's right or wrong, but it is not what they're claiming. And the fact that what the main central point is that he's investigated by the FBI, which means he's Hamas. And they proved it. They shut his bank account down. And they're acting like us today. Except this, they do say 2011 here. The point is, they previously reported in October that they discovered he was investigated. Here is what they're talking about. Group run by FBI raid target received government funds, 2010. That's even the link that they include in their research. So did Lorimer just stumble across this in October of last year and report it as if it was new because nobody cares? Probably. But it says, when she asked him, spotted him, she immediately decided to ask him about his associations. So let's watch what they said.
How are you? Hi, my name's Angela. I work for Laura Loomer. I just wanted to ask you a few questions about your investigation into the FBI for your link to Hamas and PFLP. Really?
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Is that you're absolutely clueless.
I'm not clueless.
Political wrote about it.
Canary Mission wrote about it.
Yeah, they did. A long time ago. And nothing happened. I'll show you.
Yeah, and then you were invited 2011. So yeah. I was wondering why you're still on the street.
Do you know anything about...
Yeah, they looked into your bank accounts and they froze them. Absolutely, I know all about it.
Yeah, because he was an anti-war protester. They literally say that. Like, the reality of where we are in the world, where we're watching people get shut down. Like, think about a conservative right now, ignoring the fact, it's funny how you can go the trucker convoys, which we should all support the fact that they got their bank account shut down while they were being called Nazis. Think about how dumb this overlap is, right? And they were obviously lying about that. Now, the very same government people that these same writers, fake journalists, were calling out before, rightly so, saying the government is shutting down bank accounts of the trucker convoy, right? So that same government shut down this person's bank account because they claimed he was a terrorist. They claimed he was an anti-war protester fighting for a Palestinian Hamas group or whatever. Didn't end up finding any evidence of that. In fact, they say that blatantly, and it ended. But to not apply the same logic shows you the kind of arbitrary two-party illusion BS that I'm always highlighting. And people like this are willful manipulators, guys. They don't care about the truth. They care about the narrative pushed for a partisan side, and in this case, aggressive Zionist support.
Yeah, I've been reporting on you for years.
Tell me why.
Because you're a terrorist.
And just call them a terrorist. You know, there's no journalist integrity there. The reality is that the investigation happened. They didn't find evidence. So at the best, you can say suspected. But these aren't respectable people. They're propagandists.
So brilliant.
Because you're a terrorist.
And you're a racist piece of shit.
And of course, he gets frustrated. Sure. Call him out for it. Call him a bad person for cussing. Call him a bad person for attacking her with words. It's free speech. I'm not trying to defend this person. I'm simply trying to break down the facts and how dumb it is if people like this are out there lying to people and have huge followings for it.
I'm a racist piece of shit.
A white Zionist racist piece of shit. And you better not step up, motherfucker. I'm telling you right now.
And this is what gets interesting. This guy that's with her, I don't know what's going on there, but this guy is just the looming character that seems to be sort of like their bodyguard. And he just, you know, goes up and says, you better not see do what you're doing. I think he's probably just giving him a look or something.
So take your...
Or what? You'll do what, sir?
Yeah, let's instigate, which is what they're there for.
Hey, get lost.
Okay.
Get lost, you racist, white, Zionist piece of shit.
Hey. It's going to be all over the news.
You better fucking step away.
Yeah, I'm not defending his conduct. I mean, reality being that he was also confrontational, right? But the point is that she came up to him accusing him of things that are clearly not true. That would frustrate anybody. Doesn't mean he should be screaming and cussing and threatening things. But the point is, it's obvious what's going on here, in my opinion.
You better step away. Motherfucker, there's 600 people here. Who the fuck do you think are you?
I'm sorry, but there's cussing. I should have said that ahead of time for people with families. So
that fucking racist piece of shit.
We're not looking for anything other than...
So anyways, I'm here at the Hamas encampment.
The Hamas encampment. You know what I mean? Like it's the kind of stuff that we see happening with people being driven into your face in the supposed independent media, when really, as David coined, the mainstream alternative media. People that are subjective, that have nothing but conjecture and scream things for partisan narratives, which, by the way, is pretty much what the corporate media is too. Not surprising.
So get the fuck out of here, because nobody
wants
you.
And Hamtaim Abdiyeh is threatening people on campus right now.
You fucking relax. Get out of here, man.
Yeah, get out
of
here.
Get the fuck out of here.
This is our plus space. Can you please move?
No. Move out.
I mean, like, you know, it's pretty obvious to me that the reason you do this, like, I mean, look, just flip it around in some other context. Right. I mean, if we've seen this with Israel's protests. We've seen this with Zionist protests in the United States, where somebody goes in and they get violent with them simply for being there, expressing the other idea. And that gets framed as because this person was full of hate. He hates Jews and we can't condone that. And everybody looks the other way. Right. So the simple idea that they're responding in the same way for people coming in there trying to be contentious to what they're doing. It's not hard to see who they want. This is what they hope for. They wanted this so they could go out and say he's a bad person.
We're gonna take this place just like Palestine. Zionist piece of shit. Come and claim it.
This is all he learned. This is all he started learning. Okay, get out of my spot. We're sitting here, man.
Remind me of racist pig.
Yo, fucking brush your teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, racist pig. Both
smells,
of you.
Man.
And Laura Loomer.
Not at all.
Racist, Zionist, pieces of shit, white supremacists.
Not,
right?
Dude, I'm not saying anything.
You're not. I know you're not.
I'm not saying anything.
Because you know that you are a racist, right?
We're not moving out of it.
You know you're a racist. You know you're a racist piece of shit, and that piece of shit is a racist piece of shit, right?
Well, you were linked to Hamas and PFLP, so I don't know how you feel about your...
Nope. He wasn't. In fact, they found him not. They found no evidence to connect him. Which is what the actual evidence that they produce actually shows. The articles they link to say that. But here she is just lying to you. I know, shocking. Try to hold back your shock.
So if those are designated terrorist organizations, Hatem.
Because you're a racist fucking pig.
They're designated terrorist organizations, Hatem.
Designated by who?
The United States government, the country that you're standing in right now.
Now what they do in the statements they put out is pretend that he didn't even deny it. In fact, he did like four times before that statement, but this is the kind of fake journalism you get from these people where he goes, designated by who? Which is an excellent question because they've designated any number of groups that are not terrorists as terrorists that we've proven over the years, or people that are terrorists that they don't care about. By saying designated by who does not mean he's admitting to being designated terrorist because, in fact, that didn't even happen.
Now, Hatem.
His name is not Hatem. I don't
know how to fucking say
it.
Nah, I'm good.
Yeah, who cares about his name?
Hey, listen, racists are not welcome in this space.
I mean, generally, that's the bulk of the point here. Now, again, I was going to read through more of this, but the bottom line is showing you these the links they include. Let's go through the facts, okay? Here's the articles they're posting, okay? Or actually, I think this was... Make sure I didn't double up on that. I did, okay. Did I do it twice? Either, I guess, the same way, either way. No, okay, that's jumping ahead. So I somehow duplicated that. So starting with this one, we're going to get to that article. It's right here. Just I had it down the line. So first of all, these are the ones they point to. 2010, group run by FBI raid target. It's such a weird title, by the way. Terrible title. Group run by FBI raid target received government funds. It's a terrible title. The point they're trying to say is that this group was raided, got government funds. Not that they're guilty, but this group that was raided in an investigation got funds. And ultimately, there was an overlap with, I guess, the executive branch during Obama's administration where they were at some event because they were part of some group that had overlapped with an immigrant group. I mean, I'll read it to you. Now, it says, when FBI agents raided the Chicago home of Hatem last Friday, this one 2010, that she just got breaking news, sort of like she just discovered the Azov movement story that we've been covering for 10 years. They took his laptop computer and paper records. Anything with the word Palestine on it. You see where this goes? It's obvious what's happening here, in my opinion, especially as we can see today. But it says federal search warrants indicate that authorities are looking for connections, looking for connections. How do you raid somebody when you don't have evidence, but you're looking for connections between terrorist organizations in the Middle East and South America and certain anti-war leaders and organizations in the U.S.? You know, because anti-war, yeah, that's terrorism, right? As executive director of the Arab American Action Network in Chicago, Hatem is a well-known advocate for immigrant rights. When federal officers raided his Northside home last week in 2010, along with residences of Minneapolis, they were looking for funding links between him and Hamas that took power in Gaza 3 years ago, remember 2010. Okay, so that's the first article. And all this ultimately says is they were looking, and this was one of the articles that kind of was like, it just happened, they're developing, right? Here's the political article that she also pointed to. Target of FBI terror support raid visited the White House, 2010. Last Friday, FBI agents executed a search warrant at his home in Chicago as part of a coordinated series of raids involving at least one other Chicago site, along with the homes of anti-war activists in Minnesota. Does this sound like a terrorism investigation? The reality is we know what this was at the height, one of the within the moment of kind of the Islamophobia push, right? And the idea was that if you were anti-war, you supported terrorism. It's absurd. It's the same thing they're doing with the Zionist conversation today. This is and again, I'm not saying that I am definitively arguing I know this person is not or is something. I'm pointing out that the claims they're making are false because of the things they're pointing to and what they're claiming they use to make these claims. And again, in general, based on my research, it doesn't appear to be anything that we can claim. But my point is, who ultimately knows those people, this person feels inside? I'm not ever going to be the kind of person that says, you think this or you feel that. That's what they do. But it says, a copy posted on the web of a grand jury subpoena served on one target of the raids in Minneapolis demands, quote, all records of any payment provided directly or indirectly to Hatem, the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. So all these are investigations. Now realize the Popular Front, I'll read what Robert said about this to be more specific. Now, Hatem has not been charged with any crime. This is the article they literally post in their statements saying he's a terrorist and he's been investigated for terrorism. I mean, they've concluded this. Did not charge him with a crime, nor do the court documents make public any targets of searches, make any explicit allegations of ties between any of the groups. Think about how silly this is. Now, the Arab American Institute, or the AAAI, the president, his name is James Zogby. Zogby says, quote, I know Hatem is active on those issues in Chicago. And we're talking about immigration, anti-war. He's very much a part of immigration reform coalitions there, which they also don't like. That would have been the purpose of the network's inclusion in this meeting in regard to the executive branch. So he says, asked if the investigation into this person was underway at the time of the White House visit in April, he said, quote, we only became aware of the probe when people got their houses raided and search warrants carried out. I think the grand jury started sitting a year ago. Now think about like FISA warrants and stuff that they're also calling out, but who cares if they go after this guy because he's the religion we don't like. That's how disgusting these people are, what hypocrites they are. This is hilarious to me. The part that they'll probably leave out in their quote unquote investigation. It says the lawyer said the investigation may extend back to protests held in connection with the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. Shh, don't talk about that part. It says the U.S. and Israel will continue to describe Hamas, Hezbollah, and other Palestinian and Lebanese resistance organizations as, quote, terrorists. You see the point? Now, Laura Loomer types will scream that's the case. Hezbollah is not a terrorist organization. It is a resistance organization that rose up and supported largely by the Lebanese people, same with most of these groups, and yet they just call them terrorists, sort of like the Ansarallah movement. They're not terrorists, guys. The entire military of Iran are not terrorists, but they say they're terrorists. That has to have meaning in this conversation. But it says, but the real terrorists are the governments and military forces of the U.S. and Israel. That's what he said. You see why they call him a terrorist? He's saying the same things in 2010 that people are saying right now, that Jews are saying right now about Israel. So let that flavor what they're calling a terrorist at this point. He's highlighting the fact that these forces, the U.S. government and Israeli governments, they're the real issue. He says, quote, the vast majority of the world sees and understands this and are in full support of Lebanese, Palestinian, and worldwide resistance to Israel and the U.S.'s naked aggression, war, imperialism, and occupation. You see, at the time this was written, that was like, what an anti-Semite. Oh my God, he hates Jews. But see, they're still trying it today, but that has lost its magic because that's not what he's saying. He's saying the truth. It is an illegal occupation. It is resistance to these. It is naked U.S. aggression. But the people come out like the loomers and just paint right over this and say terrorist, because that's all you can do. Because the occupation is now public. It writes, according to the bio on the AAAN website, Hatem had been affiliated with the group since 1999 and took over as the executive director in 2003 in regard to the AAAN, the Arab Action Network. Something like that. I forget the middle one. But it says conservative critics say the group and Hatem have promoted anti-Israel views. Oh my gosh. That must make him a terrorist. That must make him a racist Jew-hating maniac. No, it makes him somebody who recognizes Israel is doing what it's doing today, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 14 years ago. AAN officials said the organization is strictly focused on local community issues and doesn't get involved in international politics. But who cares about the facts? Let's call him a terrorist because that works for our narratives. Now, let me read to you what Robert said here. Now, this is important. I reached out to him. I wanted his thoughts on this in a broad way as well as focused. Now, he says, on the face of it, accusations that someone in the United States was or is affiliated or collaborating with in a manner to be deemed illegal, first and foremost, because just because you're working with these groups does not make you illegal. But it says, both the PFLP and Hamas, that the fact that they're somehow working with both of them simultaneously is ridiculous for the following reasons. One, the PFLP is a Marxist-Leninist group founded by a Palestinian Christian, which is comprised of mainly an atheist-oriented base of supporters. Hamas, on the other hand, is an Islamic group, and its social doctrine is diametrically opposed to much of the social doctrine, of the PFLP. The only place in which the two groups converge is on an agreement that they put their beliefs aside in order to form a united front to fight Israel. He says, number two, these accusations of his affiliation with both groups came in the early 2000s when the PFLP and Hamas were at odds at many levels publicly. So they're not even on the same side, ultimately. They're at odds with each other in the sense of not on the main goal, but yet the idea that they would be working in both. My point is, this is the kind of flimsy game that's played. The game is make them Hamas. So you find a group that average Americans won't know from Hamas, from, you know, whatever the saying is, from a hole in the wall. Like, oh, that's a group for Arabs in somewhere in the Middle East, must be Hamas, right? That's the kind of ignorance they're peddling. The point is, it's obvious this is not true because the investigation showed that there was none evidence. And I've got another article we're going to show you next that makes it even more clear. But it goes, for anyone that understands the moods of the older PFLP supporters towards the Hamas ideology, they were extremely critical and often outright opposed to Hamas for a number of historical reasons between the two. Although today the relations between these two groups have been mended for the sake of uniting all parties in Palestine to confront Israel in a united armed struggle, legal, for Geneva Convention, occupied territory, which is the case with almost all of the Islamic, Marxist, and secular national movements. A PFLP member or affiliate would not also be a part of Hamas. It's ridiculous. It says the only way, number three, someone could be conceivably so-called affiliated with both is in them having contact with supporters of members of both, which would be the equivalent of your cousin being a member of the Democratic Party and your brother being with a Republican supporter. We have to keep in mind that every mainstream Palestinian political party, with the exception of the mainstream branch of Fatah, are considered by the U.S. government and Israel to be terrorist groups. But for the Palestinians, these are political parties that they see as part of a democratic system, or at least that they should be up for election, as was the case in 2006, which is what Robert and I've talked about this, which is the stated narrative, but we both have doubts about whether that was literally what happened. I find it hard to believe Israel would allow an election for a group they were already calling terrorists. That seems kind of silly. And then funded them to make that the reason they didn't honor it. I think that's what happened. But either way, the bottom line is, just because the U.S. government says they're terrorists, it's a pretty meaningless statement. Could be, certainly. But also the investigation they point to finds that they don't find evidence, and yet they say that they found it anyway. And people will go on stating this probably because Loomer said. But it says the U.S. said that they tried to argue she... Hold on. This was... there's two parts I'm going to get to in a second. I forgot that I had to jump down here that I want to include. Now, first, before we go past that, did we already go over this one? No, okay, so this is the last part. So this is about the bank being frozen. So same point, this is the year later. So 2011, bank freezes account of Arab American activist who visited the White House. Oh, here, hold on. There we go. And it says down here, I have it highlighted right here, a spokesman for the Treasury Department, and this is really revealing to me. His name is Marty Adams from the Treasury Department of the United States, said Tuesday in 2011 that neither Hatem nor Naima were on any sanctions list. A year later, mind you, after the supposed investigation that Loomer broke way in 2023, because it's breaking news, which are publicly available on the agency's website. He says, quote, Treasury has not designated either him or his wife as terrorists. Then it goes on to say, this person says it was possible that their accounts were blocked by Treasury, their bank accounts, because they were frozen, pending an investigation, even in the absence of a formal designation, which seems a little bit flimsy. But then guess what? A Treasury Department official spoke up and said, wait, the agency's not empowered to do that. He says, quote, we don't have the authority to freeze assets absent an actual application of sanctions, which I argue they could do whatever they want. But guess what that says to me? They're literally going, we can't even do that. We would have to designate them terrorists first before we could freeze their accounts. But yet, weirdly, their accounts were frozen under the argument that they were terrorists. Where do you think that came from? I mean, I guess it could be the government lying, or it could be another government stepping in to accomplish the same thing. You can decide for yourself. The point is, it did not end the way they said, so they're lying. And on top of that, the reality is that the U.S. government's going like, we didn't even do that. So what the hell are we talking about here? Now, here's what they keep pointing to. This, the Canary Mission article. Now, all this is the same thing as saying free Palestine means you hate Jews and writing all these things down. Look, there's a Palestinian flag. Look, he says free Palestine. Look, he says occupation. All this means he hates Jews and he's a racist terrorist. That's what this is. I'll prove it to you. Anti-Israel and anti-US statements. First of all, that doesn't make you a terrorist. But here's what he says. Now, every one of these are supposed to be the proof that this guy is a terrorist. First, here's the first dangerous quote. The global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is making a dent on Israel and its indemnity over the Palestinian people and the Arab world. And even here in the U.S., Israel is beginning to be seen as the criminal pariah state that it is. Guys, that's the reality, and that's what the world is finally seeing, and Jews around the world are even saying that themselves. But back in 2011, oh my God, you were the worst person in the world. Why? Because they were far more influential at that point, and they hadn't committed an open genocide killing 50,000 children that woke up the world to their crimes. Think about trying to pretend that means you're a terrorist. When you can see, I mean, get the truth. Now, and I'm not going to read them all, but my God, if he should go through them. Every one of them is the same. Here's another one. He also states this at the same protest, the Intifada in Palestine, the revolution, the resistance. He says, I truly believe that the Palestinian people are winning and that they will win their freedom and independence from the Israel and the United States. Terrorist. I mean, come on, guys. How silly is this? Here's another one. Different protest. It wasn't a war between Hamas and Israel. It was a war by Israel against the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people fought back and were victorious against that Israeli aggression. I mean, how are you calling this terrorism? You got to be in a special kind of stupid world. There's a Zionist lens over this that makes everything. It doesn't even matter what they said. They could stand up and say freedom, and you go, "Oh, terrorism!" Because he's what we say he is. It's ridiculous. Look, we'll even get to the ones that they highlight in bold, special ones. Here's the next quote: Israel's political and military goals were not met, and as in the summer of 2006, when the Lebanese resistance defeated Israel's military, all this was true, by the way, the Palestinians and their resistance emerged victorious. You see, what they're trying to make it seem like is you can't say Palestinian resistance. That means you support terrorism. No, because the world is finally seeing the truth. Armed resistance is a legally protected act under the Fourth Geneva Convention because it's an occupied territory. But they don't like that. Facts are uncomfortable, I know. Ask Ben Shapiro. At least he used to say they don't care about your feelings. Not anymore, though. But I mean, guys, literally go forward. You'll see every single one of them. The Palestinian resistance to Israel's offensive is a legitimate response to an illegal military occupation. Terrorism. That's what they're actually doing. Every one of them. Now, the Canary mission does the same exact thing, but it has one point that they do highlight that I want to break down as well. Now, this, if everything they say, this is one that you say, okay, maybe there is some sort of truth to it. I disagree, and I'll show you why. But it says he has supported a terrorist. That's one of the things she says. You support a terrorist. Well, let's look at what they're claiming. First of all, if you click that link, it's no longer there, which is hilarious because they're citing the link, even though it goes to a dead page, which is classic Loomer journalism, as far as I'm concerned. But here's the point. Here's the Wayback Machine. Here's the article they're actually citing from 2017. Palestinian activist deported to Jordan from Chicago. It says, dozens of demonstrators gathered at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport on Tuesday to show their support for a Chicago Palestinian activist. Now, it says, with a decades-old record of bombings in Jerusalem prior to her deportation to Jordan. Now, there's a whole story around this, that they claim she was bombed, that she was part of a bombing campaign, and that then she fled, got away, and then ultimately tried to lie to get into to immigrate into the United States, and that's why they wouldn't. And it's a whole story, and maybe that's the truth. Here's what I highlighted. It says, in 1970, her name was O'Day, I think it's O'Day, was convicted of two bombings in Jerusalem. That's this article, by the way. I just have it highlighted here. Doesn't look like it. Oh, wait, it does. I thought it was gone. Never mind. So let's read it from here. It says, first of all, first point, some of her supporters vowed to take up her cause. It says, quote, we will liberate Palestine. That is Hatem saying that. And he was the coordinator of her defense committee. And says, quote, we will liberate Palestine because of the ODEs of the world. Now, if you just read that and you believe the claims, which may be true, you would say he's supporting a person who committed terrorist acts against the state of Israel. Now, there's a whole bunch of things you could say, even if that's the case. One of which would be that violent acts against an occupier, and she didn't. The argument is in regard to civilians versus the military and the IDF and the settlers, which is one of the points Robert makes, is that those are still legal acts of armed resistance. When aimed at civilians, which she claims she didn't do, it would not be. But you see, that's a point that is never going to be acknowledged because to them, there is no armed resistance, which shows you how dishonest they are. But let's get into the point where she felt that she argues, at the very least, that this is not even what happened. In 1970, she was convicted of two bombings in Jerusalem, because we know how completely objective the Israeli courts are, right? It says, including one that killed two young men at a supermarket. She insists that she was tortured into confessing by the Israeli military, which, whether you believe her or not, we know as a matter of fact that happens. I mean, I'll even just grab this one. Oh, for crying out loud. I think I remember where I was. Crap. For the podcast, I just closed the whole article on accident. I'll read through it either way. But as this is happening, this is what I was going to grab. Point is that we know this. And even Israeli media has highlighted this many times. Israeli court says Shin Bet pressured man to give false testimony. That's what they do. Now I have to wait for this to load, for crying out loud. Well, while that's loading, I'll read to you what Robert was saying about some of this. Saying, first of all, that they tried to argue that she had broken the law to stay in the country. Well, I haven't read that part yet. There we go. It loaded. So, convicted, they claim. She insisted she was tortured. She was sentenced to life in prison, but was released in 1979 as part of a prisoner exchange with the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. It says, with family in Michigan, she applied for a U.S. visa in 1994, but didn't disclose her criminal record. But in her mind, it wasn't, because she was forced to lie about it. She also didn't disclose it when she applied for citizenship in 2004. She was convicted of lying in 2014 by the U.S. government, but the verdict was overturned. That's important. It says she didn't serve any time in prison after pleading guilty to misleading the U.S. immigration officials, but she lost her citizenship and was ordered to deport. The point was, she's arguing that at the end of the day, she was forced to confess to things that weren't true and then tried to leave that country to get away from these things, and ultimately saying that they forced her to state the things that she says weren't true. And then when she tried to argue that they weren't true in the court of law, the judge didn't want to hear it, and they just ruled anyway. But even though, by the way, the verdict was overturned, that's important. But he said, and this is, again, I think this is wildly important, Lynn Pollock of Jewish Voice for Peace, a Jewish organization, spoke on her behalf and said her grace and her resilience under this relentless, stupid, idiotic attack has been so inspiring, meaning that this Jewish organization is standing up for her because they argued that they lied about her. And at the end, the U.S. government, rather the district judge, says, well, technically she was a terrorist. Why? Because Israel said so? But it says, but looking at history, he was convinced she really had been involved in a lot of good work. So you guys can take that for what you will. What Robert says, and I think is important, which is, they tried to argue that she broke the law, right? When she entered, she tried to stay in the U.S., but she beat the case, which was widely accepted to be a politically driven charge against her, which right there shows you that you can't continue to argue that she broke the law to get in this country, which is not about the claims in Israel, but you can argue that there's a nuance there that might not be acknowledged, which would then make him, Hatem, not supporting a terrorist. But it goes on to say, and this is the most important part, even if these people are actually responsible for the attacks against on Israeli soldiers, which are the claims that there was the real claims, not about the actual civilian claim, that is their right under the Fourth Geneva Convention. That's the reality. It's an armed struggle. The only time it becomes illegal is when the attacks are carried out on unarmed Israeli civilians, which in cases have happened and should be called out. On top of that, which is, this is the real point, he says, that was what he said right there. That was the end of Robert's comments. The ultimate point being that it was overturned, that she has a right to resist against military targets, and ultimately argues that she was coerced into admitting to things she didn't do in the first place. Now, the reality is, overall, I have personally talked to many people whose families were imprisoned by the Israeli government, tortured severely, there's a lot of them, who were then put on the U.S. no-fly list and called terrorists. And even have passports in the United States who were not terrorists, all based on the claims of Israel. So I'm not saying I know for sure. You can look into it for yourself. But what I do know is all of this adds up to a very flimsy allegation of somebody who was simply a political prisoner that was not convenient for Israel or the United States. I mean, those they consider to be terrorists, even for throwing stones, are held without charge for years. We've proven this to you. And the U.S. usually blindly adopts whatever thing they say, which is terrorist. So here we are, right? We're in a position now where we can see them literally saying, you're a terrorist because of what this thing says from all these years ago, even though they don't even have the wherewithal to read the rest of the article, apparently, or they lied about it, which says they didn't even find anything. There were no charges. And I mean, on and on and on. Right? This is where we are today, guys. There are people manufacturing reasons to think certain things that nobody wants to, most people are not believing. And doesn't that show you that they're, if they have to manufacture all of this, we're being deceived. And I think most people already see that. I think most people in the world are, it's self-evident, but I'm going to keep fighting for the people that don't. We are watching a change happen, and every single person involved is going to add to that. And I think it's important. So I'm going to leave it there for the day, guys. I think what's happening here is obvious. The college protest, whether or not you agree with all of their ideas, have a right to be there. And if you think people are committing crimes, then arrest the people who have committed a crime and prove that they committed a crime. Don't just start broad stroking and acting against an entire group of people because of an allegation or because of a feeling. This is where we are today. And good old facts don't care about your feelings is absolutely supporting that feelings are better than facts today. That's the kind of hypocrisy we're dealing with. So wake up and recognize the lies out there today, which I know most of you do. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for continuing to stand up for the oppressed. Whether or not they're right or wrong, left and right, strong or weak, the oppressed, because they're oppressed, because they don't have a voice, because the powerful will always try to suppress the people who are exposing what they're doing. Thank you for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant. What if the...